WBUR, New York. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77. WABC.
Wednesday, episode D, Wednesday, 6:04 on your dark New York City morning, back here on the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show on Talk Radio 77, WABC. Now, I've been working with Bernard long enough, doing this show now for almost 6 years. Started doing middays back in 2016, then replaced Don Imus in 2018, doing mornings. But I go all the way back to the year 2001 with Bernie, doing the Imus Show at WFAN. So we've been together now for basically on and off for the better part of 21 years. And I know when I get in the morning, and he knows as well, whether or not it's going to be a great show based upon how we feel. Now, this is going to sound odd to you folks out there. I am exhausted today, and I haven't even done my major part of the work yet, which includes an event in Brooklyn tonight and an event on Long Island tomorrow night. If I'm tired now, wait till Friday morning. Bernard came in this morning, and I could tell right away he too is exhausted today.
I was going to ask you if you have any of the old stuff. Just lay it out on the console here.
I almost wish I did. But you know what's funny about that? When I go to the gym, for example, and I'm walking 13 blocks to the gym, and I'm really tired, there's at least three or four times during the walk where I say to myself, forget it. I'm just going to walk, turn around, go home, go back into bed and take
a nap. No doubt. I hear that. I mean, I feel that way all the time.
All the time. And then when I'm really tired and I make it through that walk 13 blocks, I find most of the time that's my best workout of the week.
That is, but 90% of it, or 90 whatever percent is, and it's an old maxim, is just showing up.
Right.
And and that's the case here as well.
Same
show
thing.
Up and
we're going to do a phenomenal show.
Now I feel alive.
That's it.
I feel
now alive. We're gonna rock and roll.
You
know, there you go.
Put that blowback in your pocket. I don't need that crap.
We got three great guests stopping by today, starting at 6:45. Our dear friend Ron Insana, CNBC. He'll talk about the supply shortage, why we have it, and when we can expect to get out of it. 7:40, our favorite Congressman Peter King stops by, and then at 8:40, the lovely Dr. Nicole Sapphire from Fox News is going to be here. Now, again, I'll be in Brooklyn tonight for the beautiful Pink Runway event put on by Heshy Organbaum, Michael Brincott, Maimonides Hospital every year. I'll be there, Dolores Catania, Margaret Josephs, and a host of others. But I was invited to something else tonight, which I can't make, and that is this huge fundraiser for the, hopefully, the next governor of the state of New Jersey, Jack Cittarelli, which is going to happen at Tommy Manzo's place. It's called the Brownstone in Paterson, New Jersey. Jack is going to be there. A lot of folks are going to be there, and he even talked about that on this show yesterday. A very important fundraiser for Jack Cittarelli tonight after last night's second debate against Phil Murphy. And before I even ask you, Bernard, I have a feeling, like me, you thought that once again, Jack Cittarelli kicked Murphy's ass last night.
I have no idea.
Really?
I didn't see not hide nor hair of it.
It was on Newsmax.
Get out of town.
Yes, yeah,
are you kidding me?
Yeah, I swear.
Oh, God. I had no idea.
Yeah.
No, I missed. I didn't see anything. I saw a couple of fake news clips this morning.
Right.
But you can't trust the fake news. Obviously, they're tilted in favor of Murphy.
What were those? What fake news channels? I'm curious.
In this case, it was Channel 4. I watch Michael Gargiulo and what's her name? The
Darlene Rodriguez?
Yeah. Darlene.
Okay. Yeah.
So I watched that. They played a couple of clips, which gave nothing up.
Nothing up.
Essentially, really, a lean towards Murphy, as I said. But no, so you tell me.
Well, Cittarelli called him out for being crooked. In fact, that's the first cut here. where Chitterelli calls out Phil Murphy for being crooked. Play that, Justin.
The budget is up $11 billion. So just as it's that easy to increase spending, I think it's just as easy if we all sit down together to tighten the belt and find places to cut. I will tell you that I believe state government is bloated, inefficient, and corrupted by certain special interests, including those that have given the governor more than $10 million over the past 5 years.
So he talks about the government being corrupt and government getting a ton of money, and basically, where has the money gone? Which, of course, is a shot at Phil Murphy. Here's some more Jack Chitterelli last night in his second debate against Phil Murphy.
Listen, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper, and there are hardship cases. But I do believe that the unemployment benefits were too generous for too long. When you take the New Jersey unemployment benefits, add to that the $300 weekly supplement that came from the federal government, and on top of that, the eviction moratorium, we ended up with the situation we had with one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, and yet everywhere you went, there was a help wanted sign. And as you go around the state, you talk to business owners, I can't tell you how many business owers would tell you, I have people walk in and say, I'd love to go to work for you, but you have to pay me cash. I don't want to lose my unemployment benefits.
Boom. Boom.
That's the money
slam
shot
dunk,
right there.
Baby. Slam dunk.
Money shot.
That is a national issue right now. That is what we're going to talk to Ron and Son about. Part of it is paying people not to work, paying people not allowing people to stay home and not paying rent, and then disincentivizing people to go to work. That's why we have all these shortages and these supply log jams. Because of just that in New Jersey and everywhere else.
That's a big part of the story last night. I don't know, because I didn't see the whole thing, whether or not he actually went after the Biden, which Bernie talked about yesterday. I don't think he did. In other words, Phil Murphy's always aligning Chitterelli with Donald Trump, and Bernard, very smart. So then why don't you align this guy with this current horrible president? I don't think that happened last night.
Make him defend very, very unpopular, because in light of especially the Virginia governor, the gubernatorial candidate, what's his name?
Terry McAuliffe.
Him saying that Joe Biden is a drag on my camp. He's hurting me.
No.
He's got to be hurting Murphy in New Jersey, because he's really unpopular. But I don't know. I don't know. I didn't see it.
He didn't bring it up. Yeah. Are you mad?
Listen, first of all, I want to confirm that he didn't bring it up. But maybe it wasn't conducive with the questions.
I guess not.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe Murphy decided, well, Biden is not exactly the guy
I want brought up.
Right. So I don't want to bring up Trump and give him the opportunity to bring up Biden.
There you go. So that is one of the major stories last night. Jack Chitterelli versus Phil Murphy 2. Rocky, Apollo Creed 2.
Yeah, well, you and I spoke with Jack Chitterelli for the people that don't listen late in the show.
Yeah.
And this guy, as we mentioned yesterday, this guy, we really like this guy a lot.
Love him.
I mean, this guy has no aspirations on it for national office or anything like that.
Well, not yet.
But he really does have the potential.
Yeah, not yet. I mean, he's got, if he wins this, and he has becomes as beloved as we think he can be if he wins, that may change. Right now, he's never won any real big races. So, you know, it's like Ron DeSantis probably didn't have aspirations of being president when he first ran for governor of Florida. Once you get to that level, then you start to have those types of aspirations.
Well, my point is that this guy is the real deal.
I agree.
We love this guy. He's tough, he's smart, and he says the right things, just as you heard there in that second clip. That was beautiful. Beautiful.
It was well said. Like you said, we'll talk to Ron and Sana, our good buddy CNBC, at 6:45 about some of those things. Another major story locally, not just the gubernatorial race in New Jersey, is this Nets story with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie told the Nets, I'm not coming. I'm not going to get vaccinated. So the Nets said, well, you can't play home games. He said, fine, I'll just play games on the road. Unbelievable. He could just make that decision. I'll just play games on the road and then I'll show up for practice. And he was doing that a little bit. And then the Nets decided yesterday, enough is enough. If you don't get vaccinated, you cannot come here. And they sent him home and said, see ya. So now Kyrie Irving has the choice, get vaccinated or don't. That's your right. And forfeit millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Now, Kyrie Irving has already made enough money for a couple of lifetimes. So like you always say, Bernie, if you want to stand up for a constitutional right and be a hero, he can do that. He's made millions and millions of, I think he's an idiot, but he's made millions of dollars. So he is that guy that could afford to do this because he's made that type of FU money.
I think he's a patriot. He's sacrificing millions of dollars for a very, very valid constitutional principle.
This guy is a BLM supporter.
Freedom of choice.
He's a BLM supporter. He's a big mouth.
I don't agree with him on everything.
On anything.
But in this, he's sacrificing way more than Colin Kaepernick ever did.
Again, he's already worth enough money for three lifetimes.
I hear you.
If he was a rookie in this league and he had made $100 million, he may not be doing this. He could afford to do this.
I hear you now, and I heard you before when you said it, and then I still said my comments, so I stand by them as well.
Okay.
He's sacrificing that. You know, in this, really... You can really never have too much money, honestly.
Oh, come on,
look, this guy still has a lot of millions to make. And he's standing up for a principle, which is what a lot of people are doing. A lot of pilots, a lot of nurses, a lot of soldiers are going to be doing it. A lot of police officers, firemen. A lot of people are going to be doing the exact same thing that Kyrie Irving is doing. So I applaud him for that.
Okay. You could applaud him. There's nothing heroic about not being able to pay the telephone bill or the electric bill. When you've got kids at home and you got to take care of your bills, so you stand out there and yell and scream, I'm not going to do what the government tells me to do when they shut out your lights. Now, again, he doesn't have to worry about that. That's why he's not a hero, in my opinion, or Dave Chappelle or any of these guys, because they're millionaires. The guy in the street that maybe makes $40,000 a year, that guy who really is sacrificing a lot because every bill is...
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's between feeding your kids and not feeding your kids...
That's
Kyrie
Irving.
I understand that. I really do. But, look, I still applaud what he's doing. The principle of what he's doing is very, very valid. The government has no right... to tell you what to put into your body.
It's not the government. It's the NBA.
No, it's the NBA because the mandate, the executive order, tells companies with employees over 100 that employ people that over 100 people employed in your service, you have to mandate that your employees take the vaccine.
Correct.
So it is the federal government.
Yeah, it really is. It does come from them. You're right. Here's Sean Marks, the GM of the Brooklyn Nets, explaining the Kyrie Irving situation yesterday.
We're not looking for partners that are going to be, you know, halftime. I don't think that would be fair, not only on the team and staff and ownership and fans, but to be quite frank, not fair on Kyrie either. When you're putting somebody out there that potentially can't get the right ramp-ups and right build-ups and so forth and look as good as he or the team should under a different set of circumstances, that's why this decision was ultimately made. Ultimately Joe Tsai and myself made. We... as always, involve a lot of people in this, but this decision came down to the two of us, and it's what's best for the organization at this point in time.
And it's not just the federal mandate. In this case, it's the New York City mandate that Bill de Blasio has put into place,
which is why he
was going to play the away games. But if the Brooklyn Nets do indeed employ more than 100 people, they come under the purview of that Biden mandate.
Yes.
Executive order, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's not a law, by the way. It is not a law.
He said he was going to play the away games, and he opted not to play an away game in Philadelphia a couple nights ago.
I acknowledge he's half a screwball.
He's a jerk-off.
He's a screwball.
He's an unlikable idiot.
But in this particular case, I just have to say, all things else excluded, I applaud what he's doing.
Fair enough. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Phones are open. If you saw the Chitterelli-Murphy debate last night, your thoughts on Kyrie Irving, plus a ton more stories we'll get to today. Three great guests, Lydia Reports and Beat Bernie. This is the Wednesday edition of Bernie and Sid, and trust me, you're going to want to keep it right here.
To know somehow you are near. I have often walked on this street before.
Isn't this nice?
But the pavement,
a Broadway show tune,
always stayed beneath.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, heard everywhere. On that 77 WABC app, simulcast out on Eastern Long Island News Talk 107.1 FM, and also live streamed at WABCRadio.com. We're on TV, folks, or we're on your computer, whatever you want to. You can watch it. Look at Sid. He's all dolled up. And I look like, I just crawled out of a dumpster.
I feel very tired today. I don't feel handsome.
I feel tired right now.
I threw this together very late last night because tonight I'm getting dolled up like the parade on Monday. Really dolled up. velvet vest, velvet jacket, pink tie that cost me $100 at Nordstrom's. So tonight is the big night for me.
Well, listen, anytime you put on a sports jacket, I mean, you could wear sweatpants. I swear to God, it's true. I learned that a long time ago.
Yeah.
You put on a sports jacket and it just changes everything.
Especially this one. This is Joseph.
That's very nice. No, it's a very nice, you know, and a pocket hanky and all that. It's above and beyond. But
I got to tell you this quickly. So yesterday, I got to go buy a pink tie. I had to go to about 90 stores. I went to Columbus Circle and went to the whole mall. I couldn't find a pink tie. Nobody cares about breast cancer. All these stores don't care. J. Crew, Hugo Boss, nobody. Finally, I go to Nordstrom and I find a pink tie. Yeah, right, bastards. So I call Joseph Abood and I say, listen, here's my outfit for tomorrow night, and I was going to wear dark green theory pants. He goes, when you get home, FaceTime me. Let me see what you're wearing, and I'll put together your outfit. So that's what I did. I got home yesterday at about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I laid all my stuff out on my bed, and I'm FaceTiming with Joseph Abood to make sure he's okay with the outfit. He changed the slacks. He changed the shirt. He changed the vest. He changed everything. But now I'm good to go for later on tonight.
What does that say about your judgment?
Not good.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, that's good to have a guy like Joseph Abood in your back pocket.
Or so to
speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
On speed dial. Yeah. Hey, listen, yesterday, believe it or not, the governor, Kathy Hochul, the wolf in sheep's clothing, she actually apologized. Janice Dean and a bunch of parents of dead, you know, nursing home patients, victims of Governor Cuomo, former governor, Smug Thug Cuomo. She actually apologized to the families, which was a poke in the eye to the governor. It was good to see, and finally some sort of semblance of accountability. Not nearly enough until the lawsuits come out, and well, us taxpayers are going to have to reimburse everybody because of what the arrogant thug did to these patients. But anyway, that was good. I like that. That was, again, like I say, it's a slap in the face to him. I'm sure today he's plotting. How do I get back at this lady? How do I? Remember what he said? Who cares? Who cares where they died? Who cares? They're dead. And, a lot of people care, especially their families.
What does this do for her? You know, I know that Letitia James and Jemani Williams and some of these folks are getting ready to run against her. I'm not even talking about the Zeldins, the Giulianis, the Astorinos. What does something like this do for her in her effort to win the gubernatorial next time?
Well, it doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt at all. I mean, it was the right thing to do. I mean, somebody should apologize. Somebody should acknowledge the disaster, which was that decision, and
right.
She did. So I'll give it to her on that. Also, AOC, Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, who, by the way, is a certified screwball, and another congressman named Richie Torres. I don't know much about him. He's a liberal, of course, but I reserve judgment on this guy. They all went out to Rikers Island yesterday to visit and check out the conditions. Haven't gone to the southern border yet, but they went to Rikers Island to see, these poor inmates are suffering so bad. We gotta decarcerate. We gotta release about 1,000 people. By the way, Kathy Hochul should be apologizing to the families of the victims of the Rikers Island inmates that she let out that got rearrested for committing more crimes.
Like 9 of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's enough. So anyway, AOC and these people went out there. And they're calling for releasing like 1,000 inmates. It's absolutely ridiculous. I know the inmates were fond of throwing feces and urine on the corrections officers. I'm not sure if that happened yesterday, and I'll just leave it at that.
First time I saw that was Silence of the Lambs, when Anthony Hopkins, when he was in jail, he played Hannibal Lecter, and Jodie Foster was walking through the jail cell. And some guy was pleasuring himself and ended up throwing his stuff right at her. And I'm like, oh, my God, what a difficult job, man.
This is where Matt Meaney would play the Trump clip. They're full of crap. And, of course, the big story, again, from last week, which was ignored by the Sunday morning shows and all the big fake news media shows. The FBI, the DOJ attacking parents for expressing their free speech. Your friend, Asra Nomani.
That is my friend.
She's a white nationalist domestic terrorist.
No, she's not.
Oh, okay. Well, they say she is.
She's a great mother. In fact, she wears a T-shirt all the time that says, I'm a mom, not a domestic terrorist.
She's a liberal Muslim single mom.
Oh, she's the best.
A woman of color. And yet, she is she's there at the school board saying, what the hell are you teaching our children? What are you doing?
Anyway,
she was on CNN yesterday, and she came armed with the facts. She brought a stack of books, And she actually had them flagged where she would open it up and show this Brianna Kayla. Look, right here. It says it right here. Here, here. Look, this is what they're teaching them. Pornography, blah, 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 blah. Take a listen to this.
It literally says here, whiteness is a bad deal. And it has a symbol of Satan. And this is the contract that they say whiteness brings. And children are getting this book. And I fit into the intersectional world. I'm a Muslim. I'm an immigrant. I'm a mom of color. I am a single mom. But yet I deny all of these, you know, privileges in the new paradigm of the oppression matrix because we're all human beings.
So there you go. Asra Nomani.
She used to tell me she's had these discussions. She came from a very strict Muslim background, and her father was very strict.
Yep.
Very strict. The type of guy that would, like, stone his daughter if she got raped, God forbid. And she would go home and talk to her father about masturbation, orgasms, and he'd be like, you can't say that. And she would do it. She literally broke him down because she was so westernized, and she broke him down to the point where it became regular verbiage in the house. She completely turned him around because she's like, this is who I am. This is who I'm going to be. Accept it or don't. And he did accept it.
Yeah, he did. No, she's a very courageous woman. She really is, and a smart lady. And there's more of that stuff. I won't go into it right now, but she got into a debate with some racist professor from Texas who just, she pretty much slapped him around. But just the stuff coming out of his mouth was disgusting. But I want to move on.
We found her, by the way, not you folks. She was on with Bernie and I 5 years ago. 5 years ago. With me in Miami 8 years ago. So
well, the big story that came out yesterday was that the face of domestic terrorist parents was this one guy that they arrested back in, I believe, early June or late May. He went up to the school board to try to get them to acknowledge that his daughter in Loudoun County, his daughter was sexually assaulted / raped by a boy in a skirt in a girl's bathroom.
Oh, my God.
And before he could get the words out of his mouth, they cut his mic off and they had the police arrest him,
right.
Believe it or not. And then everybody was making fun of him. Hey, if you're going to get arrested, wear a shirt that covers your fat belly. Well, it turns out his daughter was actually the victim of sexual assault. Here is the Loudoun County School Board in June denying that this type of stuff occurred in their bathrooms. This is actually Cut 11.
Do we have assaults in our bathrooms or our locker rooms regularly? I would hope not, but I would like clarification.
To my knowledge, we don't have any records of assaults occurring in our restrooms.
This is good.
Yeah, there you go.
That's good.
To our knowledge. But now it turns out that same boy, now his daughter's a ninth grader, that same boy in a skirt with a penis that's using the girls' bathrooms, that they're allowed to use the school's bathrooms, he was arrested again last Friday for a similar charge.
He was.
He was arrested last Friday for a similar charge. And that parent was on TV last night. I'll play this cut 9 of this guy, just what he said. He said a lot of things, but among other things, he said this.
That's scary. That's really scary, you know, that our government is going to weaponize theirself against parents, and they're using my video across the nation to spread fear. That's wrong. I'm not a bully. I'm not a racist. I love everyone. I love this country.
He loves his country. Bottom line, what happened to him was horrible. And the facts have come out now. His daughter was raped, sexually assaulted, and they shut him down. And yet all the fake news playing the tape of, these white nationalist domestic terrorists at these school board meetings. And they show that one arrest. I mean, there have been virtually no other arrests. They show that one, and that was the story behind that.
Too, for Dan and Long Island and the rest of you guys that called in our Kyrie Irving discussion. Marty got to say the same thing 100 times. We always talk about how smart this audience is. You're not that smart. Marty put Facebook posts up. I don't agree with the vaccine mandate. For the millionth time, I don't agree with the vaccine mandate. I think it is unconstitutional. I think it's intrusive. But I'm resigned to the fact that it exists. It exists. And me living in New York City, if I want to go to a play, a restaurant, a ball game, I have to get it. And I don't understand why certain people would forfeit millions and millions of dollars, despite what Bernie believes and he feels. That's fine. We're allowed to disagree. I don't think that makes any sense. But I do not agree with vaccine mandates for the millionth time. Go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, Jesus. How stupid are you people?
Right. Well, they're standing up for principle. That's
fine.
One word answer for principle. And traffic and sports is coming up next. Right now, it is time for the 77 WABC Clip of the Day. Listen to Greg Kelly today and every weekday afternoon at 1:15 to 3 p.m. Here, Greg reacts to every day being a theme. What the hell? Reacts to every day being a theme day after yesterday's International Day of the Girl.
Woo! International Day of the Girl. Yay! It's a holiday for some people, but it's International Day of the Girl! Yay! What the hell is International Day of the Girl? Yesterday was Columbus Day. It's a holiday for some people, for some racists out there, but it's International Day of the Girl!
My boy is off the heezy, I'm telling you.
Did he say it was some racists out there? He was kidding, right?
What's that?
He said yesterday was Columbus Day. It's a holiday for some racists out there. He was kidding or being serious?
Oh, he was being facetious.
Okay, good.
No doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, he celebrates Columbus Day.
Oh, good. All right.
But I follow this guy on Twitter, and he really is...
He's funny.
He's eccentric, let's put it that way. Does he have any money? If he has money, he's eccentric. If he has no money, he's kind of crazy.
Whether he's broke or not, and I love him, he's a weirdo.
This is Sid on Sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Sponsored by Peerless Boilers on 77 WABC.
Well, the ALCS is all set. We know the Boston Red Sox moved on two nights ago, took out the Tampa Bay Rays in four. Same thing with the Astros and the White Sox. Houston clobbered the White Sox yesterday, 10-1. They're on their way to the ALCS. Here's your matchup for the right to represent the American League in the World Series. It's the Boston Red Sox versus the Houston Astros. By the way, this is the fifth consecutive season the Astros are in the ALCS. So that whole cheating scandal a couple of years ago, I guess it wasn't as big as people thought it was, which I did say years ago. They're back in the ALCS. Once again. Now, the National League, we've got one team moving on to the NLCS behind the Heroics from Freddie Freeman.
The Brewers in a shift. It's a fly ball to center field. Lorenzo Cain going back at the wall. Freddie Freeman's left the yard and put the Braves on top in the bottom of the eighth with a solo shot to left center. They lead it 5-4 in game four of the NLDS.
Underdog Atlanta Braves beat the Brewers last night 5-4. Atlanta moving on to the NLCS. They take out the Brewers in four. The only series going to a fifth and decisive game, the Dodgers and the Giants. The Dodgers got it done last night behind Mookie.
Dodgers have had traffic all game. That ball's driven into right field. Bryant turns and runs. Mookie bats! Two-run blast! 4-0 Dodgers!
Dodgers win 7-2. They'll play the fifth and decisive game of that series on Thursday night for the right to play the Braves in the NLCS. Hockey season starts locally tonight. The Rangers back on the ice in Washington taking on the Capitals. The Islanders in Carolina tomorrow. And the Devils, which nobody cares about, will host the Blackhawks in New Jersey on Friday. Sports brought to you by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Check them out today at PeerlessBoilers.com and PavilionTankless.com. They do build America's best boilers. With sports, I'm Sid. Guy Steve Perry just reposted this picture of the three of us, right?
In fact, I posted it from 2018. You, me, and Steve Perry. It's a great picture. It's up on my Facebook. I reposted. You know, how about that? I'll repost it today.
Let's go to Bernard McGurk's Facebook page. Steve was in studio a couple of years ago, the great lead singer of Journey, but of course that song, Oh Sherry, which Justin is a great board up, but still has no idea how to kind of lower the music. It just goes away.
You got to fade it slowly.
Right. A little slower than that, slow, Justin.
But he's on the job.
He must be terrible in bed, Justin. He's got to be terrible. He's got no nuance.
OJT. It's on the job training. The
is that
doing,
what it is?
He's doing really well. Believe
me. Oh, he's great. He's great.
He's a quick learner, and this is part of the process.
He's actually one of my favorite board ops ever.
There you go.
I like his personality.
So why are you harshing him?
Well, he's just not great at a couple of things. It's not a big deal. I'm not great at everything either, just almost everything.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ron
and Sean is great at everything. He is, of course, a genius when it comes to business and industry, all that stuff. Been at CNBC for a very, very long time and a longtime dear friend of me and Bernard, going back to our days on the I Miss in the Morning show. Here he is, Mr. CNBC, Ron Insano. Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Thank How are you?
Very warm welcome. I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. Well, you deserve a warm welcome because you're just a mensch and a sweet guy. Now, I wanted to bring you on this morning to talk about this shortage supply. And you and I went back and forth a little bit last night. Really, you, because you're the genius. I'm not. And you said, listen, it's very tough. Last year, we basically shut down the whole global economy just by flipping the switch, and you can't get it back doing it the same way. Is it really that simple?
Yeah, it is. I mean, in the sense that we've also, dealt with the Delta variant, which gave us a second wave of the coronavirus shutting down portions of the global economy. Like Vietnam shut down right now, so things aren't coming out of port. China had to reshut some areas of the country, which again disrupted supply chain. So we're short computer chips, which affects car production, appliance production, computers, obviously, and there are a whole host of things from food to other basic goods that we simply can't get from one place to another. And it's causing these mass shortages. It's almost an everything shortage at this point.
Yeah. Washing machines, TVs, home furniture, all this stuff. As you mentioned, cars, but food as well, gas, lumber. Ron and Sana from CNBC and the Bernie and Sid Show. Ron, but it's also, you say that the stuff is not coming out of Vietnam and other places, but there have been ships backed up for weeks now, And finally, the Biden administration seemingly coming out of their lethargy and realizing there is a problem. They're getting a task force together today, but it's been weeks. So why the logjam? Now, part of it, I will posit to you, you tell me if I'm right or wrong. There is a labor shortage, and part of that, the blame goes to the Biden administration, according to some people, for paying people not to work and, eviction moratoriums, paying people to stay home without having to pay rent, stuff like that, not looking, disincentivizing working. What do you think of all that?
Okay, so that's been proven empirically to be untrue. The 25 states that rolled back the pandemic unemployment insurance benefits before they were actually set to expire in September found that no one returned to work early and job seeking did not go up. What's going on right now, and this is with plenty of data on this, that people are actually literally rethinking their lives as a consequence of the pandemic. 50% of Americans, according to a survey that was out yesterday, are thinking of quitting their jobs. The quit rate, 4 million people quit their jobs last month. And many are just refusing to return to work for a wide variety of reasons. One, they don't like the pay. Two, they don't like the job. And in fact, that's probably the bigger issue. They don't like the environment in which they work. And then they're not being compensated. If you're a hospitality worker in New York, or like, let's say you're a busboy, they can pay you $2.13 an hour with the expectation that tips will get you to the federally mandated minimum wage of $7.25. And given the pandemic, given the fear of returning to work, a whole host of other issues, people are literally not going back to work, and it's got nothing to do with the unemployment.
Well, let's take it to a different if that's true, and of course, Ron, you know this as well as anybody. Let's say it's not that. What about the shortage of folks because of vaccine mandates?
There's vaccine mandates. There's fear of actually getting the illness, which is also which predates the mandates themselves. It seems to be a relatively small issue. You know, Southwest Airlines yesterday came out and said that the pilot issues that they had were not at all related to the vaccine mandates. And so United Airlines has 2,000 open jobs. They have a vaccine mandate. They just recently had 20,000 applications for people to get the jobs at United. So it's really not that. I mean, I know people want to make this a political issue. There's just a lot of things going on in the labor force right now that have caused all these shortages. 3 million people retired early. There are a million women who are out of the workforce because they're still struggling with their distance learning for their kids because the reopening of schools this year didn't go quite as planned. A lot of factors. This is just not a simple thing.
No, it's not a simple thing. But as far as the labor shortage goes, I mean, those people that you talk about that do not want to go to work, that quit. As you mentioned, over 4 million workers just dropped out of the labor force. They still have to pay the bills. They still have to eat. So the thinking is, and the reasoning is that the government is subsidizing them one way or the other because they're not just starving to death. They're getting some. The government has stimulus checks going out to families, all these things. So there was a little bit of the government, you know, again, disincentivizing people to want to work when the when they're actually available. The jobs are available, but people just don't want to show up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say that's true up to a point, right? So there's about $2.5 trillion in excess savings in the U.S. right now. So people have a different type of cushion than they've had in the past. But I don't know that this disincentivizes work. I think people also, according to a survey that came out yesterday, want more flexibility. They don't want to go to the office 5 days a week. They want a three-day work week or 2 days from home. They want more recognition, more better treatment. And so I think that I think it's a really deeply complex issue. And I think one of the effects of the pandemic, and this has happened in the past, you get this, you know, this is a life is too short for this type mentality. And people really rethink what they're doing. They're changing industries. They're changing careers. And they're literally walking away from just some jobs that they know were going to be automated anyway. Let's say you're working at a checkout at a grocery store. You're looking at three aisles of self-check.
Hmm.
They want you to come back now for $14 an hour until they can have all the aisles of self-check.
Yeah.
Right? True. I mean, yeah. So, you know, they're just staring at that going, okay, they need me now. They're not going to need me in a couple of years.
It's true. Ron and Santa, CNBC. So Bernie played something a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday, from Janet Yellen, and we're trying to figure out when we're going to come out of this, when this labor shortage is going to end, and cargo and ships will get back to normal, and my grocery store is going to be stocked. And initially she said
in 1991.
Yeah. Well, initially she said it was not going to take long, and then she said, well, we don't really know where the end is. So what do you think? Is there an end in sight for this?
I mean, I think we go into next year. I mean, I think Jamie Dimon from Chase said it yesterday, from J.P. Morgan said it yesterday. You know, the shortages will resolve next year. But like you mentioned, you know, ships at port. There are 140 ships just in the port of Los Angeles alone that haven't been, you know, unloaded. There are hundreds of thousands of containers sitting off the shores of the United States.
And they're all full with stuff. They're all full with stuff those.
Yeah. Well, listen, Walmart and others are beginning to, again, you know, ration toilet paper and other things. We have this bizarre everything shortage. This is not something we've ever experienced before. It's not really a policy issue. I referred to the price increases as panflation. A lot of people are talking about stagflation, like the 70s and early 80s. This, if you go back to February of 2020, none of this was going on. None. This is all pandemic related.
Well, listen, it is also spending related, Ron and Sana. And as far as Janet Yellen goes, first of all, wages are going up, but not as fast as inflation. So net-net, people are losing money in this economy. And of course, you have this quantitative easing, which is a $3 phrase, for the government just printing money that we really don't have, devaluing the value of our currency, causing spiking inflation. But anyway, listen to what Janet Yellen said, to Sid's point. She was talking about inflation. She actually contradicted herself in a span of 10 seconds. Listen.
Supply bottlenecks have developed that have caused inflation. I believe that they're transitory, but that doesn't mean they'll go away over the next several months.
I mean, they're transitory, but it's not going to wait over the next several months. I mean, I feel dizzy right now, Ron.
All right. So, yeah, we have to – the word transitory, which is what the Fed began to use, I think was probably ill-advised as a description of what's going on. They also didn't anticipate the Delta variant, which kind of reshut the global economy in a certain sense. Now, when you mention the dollar being devalued because the Fed's printing money, absolutely untrue. Sorry to say it that way. Dollar's up about 4.5% year to date. So the notion that quantitative easing, which is the Federal Reserve buying Treasury and mortgage securities every month, one is about to come to an end. They're going to announce in November that they're going to start tapering that process. They'll be done by the middle of next year. And that was it was necessary during the pandemic because the financial markets literally froze up and stopped functioning. So they can take their foot off the pedal with respect to that, and it just doesn't. That's not really having an impact on inflation.
So the spending of trillions of dollars, however, during an economy that's recharging, that's got to be contributing to inflation. No,
I would argue not. And listen, so the Trump administration spent $8 trillion, right? Did not contribute to inflation. The Obama administration...
But the economy was shut down at that time. The economy's roaring back now, and that's the difference.
This is not a monetary phenomenon. This is pandemic-related. None of this would be happening were it not for the pandemic and its durability. It lasted way longer than everybody thought. We had a next wave.
It's over. There's no next wave. It's over, and enough with the pandemic-related. It's been over for a long time.
How has it been over?
Oh, come on. Over. What do you mean, how's it been over?
I mean,
have you seen the number of cases?
Have you seen traffic in the streets coming in the morning?
This is nonsense. We could talk about it for the next 10 years if you want to, Ronnie, but I mean, enough's enough. It's over. It's over. People get the vaccinated. Like, I know for a fact you've reached herd immunity.
56% of the country's vaccinated.
Yeah.
And how many have natural immunity?
Right. On top of that. And then on top of that, you know, listen, there's a lot of cases, these breakthrough cases, people get vaccinated, they end up with the Delta variant, and they get a runny nose for 2 days. They're not dying. They're not getting ventilators.
I'm not saying that, but, I mean, even still, we're just, in a fundamental sense, in the sense of economic activity,
yeah,
we're just coming out.
Well, that's this administration's fault. I'm sorry. I love you like a brother. You know how much I love you, because they keep pushing this pandemic nonsense.
Not to mention gas prices. We used to be energy independent. Okay, whatever.
All right, that's a whole other conversation. And by the way, OPEC Plus flooded the global economy with oil during the Trump administration. Nobody said anything to Saudi Arabia and Russia, who drove down prices to bankrupt U.S. frackers. They have not come back online. Instead of drilling for more oil and natural gas today, they're returning their capital to shareholders. They're afraid that another price drop would put them out of business.
But Ronnie, we don't have time. I'd like to go back and forth more about pipelines and stuff like that.
No,
but listen,
we're
love
keep doing this into the commercial. I'm going to say,
We love you, Ron.
Well, most importantly, Ron, more important than all this nonsense is the fact that your Bills beat the Chiefs on Sunday night. That's all that matters.
And handily so. And there was a hurdle.
That was a big win. I think the Bills have now proven to be the best team inside the AFC. Ronnie, we love you. Thank you for coming on today and giving us the 411 on this stuff. And keep coming back, okay, buddy? Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm giving you the 911.
Thank you, my brother.
Ron and Sana with Bernie and Sid. We'll be right back. How did you feel? I should have been gone. After all your words of steel. I got a set of balls, don't I? I add that last line. I know I said this a million times in GetRoman.com. Be dynamic in bed once again like me. I shouldn't be saying that.
It comes off a little bit like doth protest a little too much.
Well, that's like people get mad at me when I say we have a great show. They're like, let us tell you have a great show.
No, that's good. So, well, I love your arrogance. Not your arrogance, your confidence.
Yeah, well.
And your arrogance. But you're reading a spot for, you know, helping people with ED.
Right, which I don't have.
You're worried about being sort of.
Right, I don't want to be in that mix.
Attached. To, like, I'm one of those guys, and it helped me. No, be great in bed like me.
Right, like me. Anyway,
listen, even Tony Soprano had a problem.
He did?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. In my house, Christopher Columbus is a hero, okay?
That's why he had a little bit of a problem.
Sometimes. Oh, I do remember that. That's right. Yes, yes.
That's why he went to
Dr. Melfi. Yeah, the great Lorraine Bracco. All right, we got a full board of calls. Get to those later, Ron and Sana, taking a bit of a beating. That was a great conversation. We got two more great guests today, Lydia Reports and Beat Bernie. Hour number two of the Wednesday edition of Bernie and Sid is coming right up.
Yeah, this is a great song.
Howard Jones, I actually saw this guy perform live at Radio City back in the 80s.
Is he a one-hit wonder?
No, he's got like 10 big hits.
This is
and
really...
you know all of his songs. You know all of them.
I know this. This one.
Howard Jones. The good old days
and
of
you
the
wonder,
80s.
And yes, you wonder. Well, something like that. Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show. It really is good. I hate to interrupt it. But listen, we're heard live everywhere on that 77 WABC app. Download that app, ladies and gentlemen. And also simulcast out on Eastern Long Island, Newstalk 107.1 FM. Simulcast, a live stream, I should say, at WABCRadio.com. You can check us, our beautiful bald heads out. We are live in studio. That's right. We don't do our shows remote. We never did during the pandemic. Sydney and myself, we never missed a day in studio.
No.
We came to work. We didn't sit. We weren't sitting in our bedrooms in our PJs.
When there was a pandemic.
That's
now,
right.
There is no pandemic
that's
now.
That's right.
There's no pandemic, Ronnie.
There is no pandemic. And you know, which is why, again, that conversation with Ron and Sana, who I love, you know, he comes from it at a different point of view. So we know that.
Well, his point of view, you said it best during the break, was he needs to defend the indefensible. So the only way to defend all these idiotic decisions by Joe Biden is to blame it on a pandemic that's been gone for about 8 months.
Which is, by the way, what they're doing. They're blaming everything, including his poll numbers, everything on the pandemic. Not
what did I say to him? I said, blame the administration because they're keeping this pandemic alive because they feel like, hey, as long as the pandemic is alive, they're making their own excuses, right? Biden, Psaki, all of them keeping this pandemic alive because that's their excuse for when they F up. Not Afghanistan, obviously, but
their poll numbers are way, way underwater, unlike anybody's in history, I think. Both of them, both the bimbo Kamala and the imbecile in chief. I mean, way underwater, and they're blaming it all on the pandemic, not Afghanistan, the border, crime, inflation, supply log jams, and all kinds of stuff. They're ignoring it. It's the pandemic. It's the unvaccinated.
Stupid.
And by the way, the unvaccinated, again, a lot of it is, you know, black and Latinos. They don't want to get it. Just look at Kyrie Irving, like a lot of NBA players, the majority here in New York City. I think you have, like it's in the 30s, percentage-wise, of blacks and Latinos are fully vaccinated. In the 30s.
Yeah, but not the NBA. That's wrong. Actually,
no, the NBA is 90%. I know that. Yes. Those guys are, they want to make their money. That's
right.
Kyrie Irving is like, yo, I ain't doing it. You know, he's got a lot of money, and he's like,
what?
He's got a lot of money, right?
Yeah, hundreds of millions.
So, speaking of Joe Biden's tanking, cratering poll numbers, which are horrible, the always colorful Senator John Kennedy, no, not the one from Cape Cod, the one from New Orleans, Senator Kennedy, he's like a hobo on a ham sandwich. He was talking about, Biden's poll numbers, and he was always colorful. Take a listen.
I think it's fair to say that President Biden and his merry band of wokeristas have broken a lot of plates in their first 10 months. That's why his poll numbers are going down like a fat guy on a seesaw.
I don't know why I like that.
I love him, too.
I mean, it's not the most clever line, but it's hilarious. No,
you know what it is? It's his accent.
Right. It's coming from like a fat guy on a seesaw. Like you're watching Hee-Haw, you know? But again, he's a very, very smart guy. I'm not trying to ridicule my redneck friends or anything like that. The guy is very, very intelligent. So he's talking about Biden. Biden, of course, yesterday came out that, two things. Of course, 2 days ago, it was Hunter, one of the lowest, sleaziest characters in the history of presidential families. This guy, Hunter Biden. I mean, just a crackhead dog of a human being.
Worse than Billy Carter and Roger Clinton combined.
Totally, totally worse.
Some of those two guys.
This guy, I mean, listen, just hosing your dead brother's wife.
Oh, that's terrible.
Your dead brother's widow, while you're married, and it was only a recent phenomenon that he passed away. I mean, that is so disgusting.
Some of the blame has to go to her too, by the way.
Right.
We don't know who she is.
Whatever. Well, yeah, but this is guy, and of course, deadbeat dad, all this stuff. Whatever.
What do you mean? Okay. He had a kid with like a stripper, and he was smoking crack. I'm not going to attack him for his drug use. I mean, I'm a recovering addict myself.
No, but he's there taping it.
I know. He's just a loser.
And by the way, John Gruden's emails all public. Hunter emails. He uses the N-word. Nobody cares. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Fine. So
it's true.
So anyway, it came out that Joe Biden, they shared Hunter and Joe shared a bank account, and that Joe may have actually paid for that that whole hooker, that whole thing you saw on videotape with him smoking crack in a Hollywood hotel, that Joe Biden may have paid for that.
Really?
Believe it or not. Yeah,
birthday present?
They shared a bank account, and it just goes to the fact that they were intertwined, 10% for the big guy, all that stuff. And he sold a bunch of art. He sold like almost $400,000 worth of art.
Yes, he actually got $75,000 per painting.
So Psaki says this about the painting and other things, about, again, this lowlife, Hunter Biden. Take a listen.
We at the New York Post reported on Friday that the first son had sold 5 prints of his artworks for $75,000 each. I was hoping you could say if the White House knows who purchased the 5 prints and whether there is indeed a departure to the arrangement that there would be an anonymity here.
I know this is your favorite topic, but it, again, it still is topic? The purview of the gallerist. We well, still do not know and will not know who purchases any paintings, and the president remains proud of his son.
White House,
did you have another question on something else? Otherwise, we're going to move on to some
really?
Other topics.
Oh, really? You're going to move on.
Not, she's good.
Not to this.
She's good.
To this, at the very least, unethical, but at the probably just flat out corruption. And again, he's proud of his son. I mean, give me a break. He could be proud of Bo Biden, but he's not proud of Hunter Biden.
You know, I
got
to tell
listen,
you.
Listen, let me just say about the art thing.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they tried to stop him from doing it.
Oh, of course they did.
They said, don't do it, Hunter. This is going to make us look hard. He's like, screw you. I subsidized you for years and years and years and years. I was your bag man.
That's right.
I'm doing it because I need the money.
I was very close with my father. You know that, as you are with yours. My father saw me get arrested. He saw me go to rehab twice. And he never once... When I was in rehab, for example, he never once said to me, son, I'm proud of you. Never. He just didn't do it. Now, look, when he died and I cleaned my act up and I've been working with you for all these years and he was able to die and see me actually excel and do well, he certainly told me he was proud of me time and time again the last couple of years before he passed away. But when I was going through my travails, my father was not out there telling everybody, I'm really proud of Sidney. He wanted to kill me, to be honest.
Right.
He wanted to kill me. And I feel like I'm probably as close, if not closer, with my dad than these two idiots are. So this whole thing of him bending over backwards, Joe Biden, to tell everybody how proud he is of his son, that's not because he loves him that much. That's because he's trying to clean up the Biden image, because you cannot be proud of somebody who's breaking the law. What is there to be proud of? You may love him,
breaking him to pieces. It's even worse than breaking the law.
Right.
I mean, it's so
scummy.
So scummy. It's just
not proud of him.
This is one of the most fooling. This guy's a complete and total reprobate. Doesn't even cover what this oily, sneaky, pervert, disgusting individual is. Whatever. Do you think I like Hunter Biden or not? So
I think you like him.
Let's go to Dave Chappelle. Well, they caught TMZ. You know how they do with their. They're mentally challenged cameramen. They ambush people at airports.
Not right.
They did so with Damon Wayans, who is comes from comedy royalty, of course, in Living Color, one of the funniest shows ever to come down the pike. You and I have interviewed Marlon and one of the other Wayans.
Sean.
Brothers. Sean and Marlon.
Right.
Come in studio with us back
Correct.
In the day.
Right.
Just like Steve Perry did. We used to have one hell of a show going back then.
He did,
in
yes.
the mid-days. But in any case, as I mentioned, one of these, these mentally challenged cameramen from TMZ ambushed Damon Wayans. And this is what he said about Dave Chappelle and his special. Remember, he said, gender is a fact. I'm down with, the turf, team turf. Which is that trans-exclusionary radical feminist is what that acronym stands for. In other words, these trans people are not women. Let's face it. That's what he was saying. Anyway, Damon Wayans on Dave Chappelle.
I feel like Dave freed the slaves, the comedians. We were slaves to PC culture, and he just, as an artist, he's Van Gogh. At a zero. He's trying to tell us it's okay. He's a unicorn. He's amazing. Van Gogh. I've always been free, but I just think he's saying, you know what, with all that I have, I'm not afraid to lose it for the sake of freeness of speech. You can't edit yourself. Comedians, we're like, Mercedes makes a great car.
Right.
But they got to crash a lot of them before they perfect it.
It's difficult to understand, but he just said that he is the Van Gogh. He freed the slaves, and he wasn't talking about black people. He's talking about comedians. He's talking about comedians who are afraid to apply their craft to say things. In other words, like Mercedes, you have to crash a lot of them in order to perfect them in the end, and that's what comedians do. And sometimes they fall astray, they go astray, whatever, they touch the third rail, whatever it is. So anyway, that's a high praise from a guy like Damon Wayans to Jon Gruden. Of course, Jon Gruden, he got fired from the Las Vegas Raiders for private emails.
He resigned.
Was he pushed out?
I'll just tell you this. When I didn't come back for the Giant pregame show with WFAN, we got a call from Mark Chernoff, and he said, here's your choice. We're going to fire you, but if you want to go out with some dignity, right, we're going to allow you to resign.
Yeah.
So I resigned.
Okay. Enough said.
Enough said.
Now, Jason Whitlock, he came out, and he said this about the Gruden emails, and particularly the one about Damaris Smith and his lips. He says, are we black men so fragile that Gruden's comments on Damaris Smith's enormous lips can reduce us to tears? I'm just not that fragile.
I disagree with Jason there. I'm sorry. I mean, Jason really, 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 I love Jason. Known for 20 years out of Kansas City. He really goes out of his way to defend people. You cannot say that if you're John Gruden. You just can't say it.
Well,
I'm not defending that.
He didn't say it. It was a private email.
He said it in an email.
It shouldn't have been revealed.
That's a whole other argument.
He said it years ago.
Whole other argument, but he did say it. And I don't know how you defend that. I disagree with Jason.
No, it wasn't right. Of course it wasn't right.
No, it's terrible.
But should it be held to account for it 10 years later?
Yes, because it came out somehow.
Well, it shouldn't have come out.
But it came out. That's a whole other story. I agree with you, but it did come out. How do you defend it?
Well, listen,
how did Jason Whitlock defend that?
Let me just say that Eddie Murphy, back in one of his specials, he made fun of Mick Jagger's big lips. Listen to this.
Mick Jagger is an ugly with big lips. Mick Jagger's lips so big, black people be going, you got some big lips.
Okay, what's the problem? What's the problem?
That's what I'm saying. So why isn't Eddie Murphy canceled?
Because blacks can do that to whites.
No.
Whites can't do that to blacks.
You and I know that. You and I know that.
Right,
that's
it.
You see the point.
There's a double standard. It exists. Just live with it. Move on.
Right. No. I'm pointing it out. I'm exposing it.
It exists. You got to live with it.
It exposes. Listen, comedians or whatever, they can do what they want. But especially in this case, that guy was on stage making fun of another race, a guy's lips.
You can do that.
The other guy did it in a private email in a private conversation.
Again, I don't know how those emails got out, and I agree that private emails should not get out. But it got out, and Jason Whitlock should not be trying to defend John Gruden in that case because it got out, and what he said was wrong. It was offensive.
But not fireable. Not fireable.
Well, he said other things, too. We call people the F word.
Listen, we used to use that word on MSNBC.
I understand that, but it's a different era now.
Right.
I get it.
But back
me.
Then it wasn't. When he was maybe making the email, I don't know what year he made it.
I don't know either, but I did a Hillary Clinton last night. I erased like 30,000 emails.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like nervous now. I don't know what I said to you. I could have called you that 20 years ago.
We grew up calling each other the F word that rhymes with maggot, not having any sexual connotation whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
None. And that's what he was using it in that regard. Well, I guess he was using it with the gay basketball player.
Right. By the way, the worst lips.
What football player?
Of anybody.
Michael Sam.
Michael Sam. That's right. Very good. Baltimore Ravens. The worst lips of anybody is a lady named Lisa Rinna.
Right.
She's married to Harry Hamlin. She's on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She's got worse lips than Mick Jagger and anybody you could ever mention. She's the worst.
You know,
she's white. I can say that.
He probably got the boot because he made fun of Roger Goodell. He called him a P word. He also called Joe Biden the P word. But it was probably that was the reason why they said, you know what, make these things public. Roger Goodell probably made the decision.
Maybe. Listen, like I said, if it was Bill Belichick and he was coming off 4 to 5 Super Bowl wins and he's doing an amazing job, I don't think he gets fired. I don't think the Raiders even allow this to happen. But they're paying this guy an awful lot of money. And the Raiders are kind of like a okay team. So it's not a great loss.
But they still have to pay him, you say.
They don't have to, but my and I don't know this for a fact. My feeling is that Davis, Al Davis' son Mark, probably said to Gruden, he coached the Raiders twice, don't forget. So he's got a long history with the Raiders. He probably said, John, this is getting ugly. Go home. I'll give you $20 million.
Listen, Justin, you're a big sports guy. Confirm whether or not Gruden is getting paid.
No, you can't. That hasn't come out.
It hasn't come out yet, but once it does, I will be the first to jump on it.
But you agree with me that Davis probably said, it's getting ugly. Just go home. Here's $20 million, whatever it is.
I would probably assume that to be the case, just considering how quiet he stepped away.
Right. Because otherwise he would have said, fire me. You know what? Fire me. I want some of that money.
But it's so funny, though. Netflix is like, Dave Chappelle is cool, but the Raiders, we got to get rid of John Gruden. I mean, I don't know. I hear you. I know the double standard. I hear you.
But you're right about that. And Netflix stood up for their guy, and the NFL is so woke. They're so woke.
They're disgusting.
They're kind of gross, yeah. I don't disagree.
Yeah. On the Bernie and Sid Show, 1-800-848-9222. We're going to talk to the great statesman, Congressman Peter King, later this hour. And right now, we got Howard Jones. I love this guy. And he wants it. He was asking for it.
Bill O'Reilly here, and I'm warming up from the NRIA.net studios in New York. Stand by for the O'Reilly Update Morning Edition. On this Wednesday, tomorrow, I traveled to Palm Beach, Florida to interview Donald Trump. I believe at this point, the 45th president is laying the groundwork to be the 47th president. Mr. Trump has a big advantage and a big disadvantage. The plus is Joe Biden. It is not going well for the Biden administration. And most Americans know it. And it looks like things are going to get even worse in the economic realm as Americans pay a lot more for food, gasoline, heating oil, on and on and on. The minus for Donald Trump is that he continues to harp on the 2020 election, and he has not defined the January 6th assault on the Capitol. Let me explain. In order to win the presidency back, Donald Trump needs to convince independent voters to cast the ballot for him. If he continues to scream fraud about the election and not look forward, that will hurt him. And on January 6th, all he should say is that was bad for the country. Period. My interview with Mr. Trump will be on the No Spin News Monday. That is the Morning O'Reilly Update. More analysis later on.
How emotional is that part of the evening?
I agree. It is so emotional, and I get so choked up because these women, people don't realize they've lost their breasts, they've lost their hair, and that night, they get their dignity back. They feel beautiful. They are walking the runway. They are so strong. These are survivors of breast cancer and women who've come back from stage 4 breast cancer. We all join together, and they're championed, and they are the most beautiful souls, and they're shining out there. Their families are watching them shine. They're the most beautiful women in the world. It's such a feel-good moment.
Touch me in the morning, then just walk away. We don't have
to our friend from the Real Housewives of New Jersey, the lovely Marge. Margaret Joseph's being honored tonight as the Pink Ambassador for this annual event put on by Maimonides Hospital, our very good friends in Brooklyn. Pink Runway at the ballpark later on tonight, Maimonides Ballpark. And again, this will be my third consecutive year going. And Dolores and Margaret and Baruch and a host of others go every year. And the beauty of it, again, is you've got these breast cancer survivors. They're the models. These are not Hollywood actresses. These are not, Ford models. These are actual breast cancer survivors, and they're gorgeous, dressed to the T, thanks to Fashion NY, New York. And they strut their stuff, and it is emotional. It's beautiful, and it's the way it should be done. So congratulations to Heshy Organbaum, Michael Brincott, the folks at Maimonides Hospital for this huge event, which I'm heading to Brooklyn for coming up later on tonight. It's a big deal. I know you lost your sister to breast cancer. So
yeah, no, it's a wonderful, it's a beautiful deal. I like the idea of breast cancer survivors, being conveyed as beautiful women, which they are. Of course they are. I mean, they're women is what they are, who had a bad hand dealt to them.
Right.
And they survive. So you're going to, is this outdoors? Is
yes.
This, oh, it is. So
they set up tents. They set up tents.
Oh, they did. All right. Well, yes. You're going to have a good weather night anyway in this in the essentially is the middle of October, and we have September, early September weather.
Yeah, it's going to be in the 60s. Now, don't forget, you're on the beach, so it's like your house. It'll be 10 degrees cooler, but no rain, and you can dress kind of fallish.
Well, that's more of the in the spring, not so much in the fall.
Okay.
That phenomenon
occurs.
So I don't think you're going to have too many problems.
Okay, good. I'll head to my apartment. John and Margo, thank you. I love you. I'll head to my apartment in Coney Island before. Get ready.
Your pied à terre is what the hell they call that.
Is that what they call that?
Yes, that's a $3 French term.
They got the runway set up in center field, actually, at Maimonides Ballpark. You can still get tickets, folks. Just go to GoPinkRunway/Hope. Backslash hope. GoPinkRunway.org/hope. GoPinkRunway.org/hope. And I'll see you in Brooklyn later on tonight.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show. Heard everywhere on the 77 WABC app. Ladies and gentlemen, we set aside 7:40 every Wednesday for one of the greatest statesmen since Henry Clay and maybe Abraham Lincoln. Anyway, he really was a great congressman from Long Island, and he's good. He's a colleague of ours. His name is Peter King, and he's on the line right now. Good morning, Congressman King.
Good morning, Bernie. Good morning, Sid. I just made it through security here at the Charlotte Airport. I'm talking through my mask. I just got my shoes back on. I was having these nightmares because the conveyor belt was sort of stuck and my phone was in there, and I figured you guys would be calling embarrassing me throughout the whole airport. You know?
No, no doubt about it. We would have slaughtered you.
You're back in Charlotte. That means that you must be going to see the grandkids.
Actually, I was down here. A good friend of mine, Mark Walker, who was in Congress with me, is running for the U.S. Senate, and he had an event last night with Tony Dungy, and so I was invited down. I took part in that, and tell you, Tony Dungy, I never met him before. What a class.
Oh, he's a great guy.
He really is.
Yeah, I met him a million times, and what's funny about Tony Dungy is, for folks that don't follow the NFL, who was the coach that replaced Tony Dungy in Tampa Bay?
John Gruden.
Correct.
That's right.
Correct. So did you have a chance to ask Tony about his thoughts on John Gruden?
That would have been a great point to bring up last night. You know, God, how did I miss that opportunity?
Come on, Congressman.
You need to be there with you, so I could have told you that.
You could have been. Hey, next time. I don't know if you're allowed down here, though, but anyway.
No, he really is a good guy. Tony Dungy. So, Congressman King, we talked to this economist from CNBC. His name is Ron Insana this morning. The big story today, I guess, is this whole big impending shortage of goods that America is about to experience. Food, all kinds of, toothbrushes, everything. You name it, cars, everything. A shortage because of all these ships backed up. A supply chain logjam is what they're calling it. And to me, I feel a certain lethargy on the part of this administration, a malaise, no sense of urgency. They're going to meet today, but these ships have been backed up for a couple of weeks. It's like they don't even care until it reaches critical mass. Anyway, what are your thoughts on all of that?
I assume it's all Donald Trump's fault. Everything else is. So I guess this is I agree. This is a major issue. You're talking about millions of people, their jobs, and also just almost survival in some cases. And to me, this is what they should be talking about instead of all the other nonsense they're carrying on about. And it's almost as if they don't want to address any serious issue. They try to find superficial things to talk about. And if something does go bad, they still blame it on Donald Trump. Now, this has to be addressed. And again, not to play Monday morning quarterback, but a lot of us did feel that the way the unemployment benefits were being structured, that people wouldn't be going back to work. There'd be a slowdown and everything else. I don't know if anyone thought it would be this bad. No, they should take emergency action, and they should be. This, could lead to, God knows, a depression, recession. I don't know. This is serious stuff, especially now with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up, and also with people's unemployment running out. I mean, the ripple effect of this as far as jobs could be catastrophic, so. They should definitely be talking about it, addressing it, getting serious about it, and forget the $3.5 trillion boondoggle they want to put out there.
You know, it's funny. Ron Insana this morning was not blaming Donald Trump. And trust me, he's a dear, dear friend, and he would at the drop of a hat. He was not. He kept telling me and Bernie the reason behind all this is the pandemic. And at one point, I jumped in with Bernard and was like, the pandemic is over. Enough with this pandemic nonsense. It's been over for the better part of 6-7 months. He's like, oh, really? Like, basically, where do you live? So they're blaming all this on the pandemic, not Donald Trump. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that could have been valid a year ago, but not now. And
right.
The fact is, part of leadership is, as you're coming out of a crisis, is to be ready for the next one. And we were coming out of this pandemic over a year ago when the vaccine, which, again, we could disagree, I think it's a real gift, and Donald Trump, what he did on that was phenomenal in getting it. We are definitely going in the right direction, at least since last November, December, certainly January, when the vaccine was out there. No, this is the after effects of a pandemic. But you can't always be blaming that. We should have been ready for this. We should have, and, you know, the first signs of this came months ago, and that's when they should have been taking action. I haven't heard President Biden say a word about, cargo backup. I mean, this is the supply chain issue is major, and it's also the type of thing that can cause panic in the streets when people start to, if they can't get vitally needed goods and supplies, and also then people start losing jobs, and we have this whole cascading effect. Going to be a major crisis, and I agree with you. When people look around and see that almost everyone is healthy, when they see that people are, again, ready and willing, you can't blame this on the pandemic. You can't blame it on Trump. Listen, we can blame all this on World War II or the Korean War, or we can blame it on the 1929 Depression. The fact is that we are here now, and a president with good leadership addresses it, and so far there's been no action at all. Nothing.
Nothing.
All we talk about is this $3.5 trillion bill they want to ram through Congress, and you have AOC going to Rikers Island, and you have
January 6th.
And also you have Joe Biden, that whole thing about the border patrol whipping people at the border. I mean, all that type of garbage they talk about, and the real issues they're ignoring.
Just nonsense. And as you say, this could cause panic. So it's good that the fake news is not really covering it right now because it's inconvenient for them. So we'll let our listeners know to stock up before the fake news followers can stock up themselves. Yeah, listen, Donald Trump right now, he would have, a week or two ago, he would have had business leaders, union chiefs. How can we fix this? Yeah, everybody, what are we going to do? How can we get over this, get these chips and get this stuff unloaded? He'd have it all taken care of by now, if you ask me. But that's neither here nor there. Congressman King, Joe Biden's numbers. I mean, everything he touches turns to garbage. And his numbers are way, way underwater. I mean, I've maintained that he's the worst president in the history of the country. I've said this for a couple of months. I think at this point, we can all agree that he is, no?
So far, he certainly is. I mean, people talk about Jimmy Carter, and he certainly was, I think, a failed president. But he did have a good peace agreement in the Middle East. He was at least on top of the job. And, I lived through Jimmy Carter. I didn't think he did a good job at all. But Joe Biden is just like sleepwalking. And he has a lethargic look. Everything he's been involved in has been a failure. And I don't know anyone who's for Joe Biden. They may be against Republicans. They may be for a Democrat. They may be for some Democratic policies. But I don't know anyone right now who is going to wake up in the morning and say, geez, I can't wait to go out and vote for Joe Biden. he's just sort of a person who's there. And again, he has a wandering look. He has people like Psaki, who's doing a horrible job. You have Kamala Harris, who's in hiding. She's some sort of witness protection program. And this is a failed administration so far. And, going back to the cargo and everything, imagine if Donald Trump were the president. That's all you'd be seeing in the evening news. All these ships lined up and all the containers that haven't been opened.
Right.
And they'd be going around to local businesses saying how they're starving, we're not going to survive. And Donald Trump is doing nothing. And that's all you'd be hearing every day on the television, like we saw with the cages, so-called cages. With the kids, when Trump was president, they were the Obama cages. Trump was innocent on that, but that's what you saw. Now you see nothing about what's going on at the border.
Nothing. Peter King, the great congressman, live from an airport in Charlotte, North Carolina, on this Wednesday morning.
Are you laughing now? You think it's funny being down
there? Yeah, what's so funny, bro?
You know I spend a lot of time down there. My father-in-law lives in Charlotte, so I'm there all the time. I want to ask you about tomorrow night. Are you going to be in Freeport with me?
I'm going to try and get there. That's the cigar and car party or something.
Yes, like yes. I've been employed to host that event tomorrow night for the GOP Nassau County. Well, that'll be my second straight week with the GOP Nassau County. So I guess I'm a member, right? I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, you were the star of the dinner.
No, it wasn't.
The big dinner. I mean, like the sex symbol, women lining up to see him, to hug him and kiss him. And, you know, rub his bald head. It was really a great moment in time. It really was.
Well, I'll tell you this. A lot of folks are taking a lot of interest. We talk about this often, but it is a big deal, these local races out there. And Donnelly and Bruce Blakeman and all these local elections, which do have national implications when you talk about something as serious as criminal bail reform. So as small as it sounds, Nassau County, Freeport, and Woodbury, these are very, very big elections coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they really are. And the election with Ann Donnelly, when she beats Todd Kominsky, that will have state and national implications, because this is the one race maybe in the country where bail reform is right out there. And the crime surge, all of that, that's the issue. The author of the bail reform bill, Todd Kominsky, he's the guy running. Ann Donnelly is a career prosecutor, unblemished record, totally powerful record. And if she can beat Kominsky, who was the odds-on favorite going into this, he had all the money, he had the name, he was a big-shot state senator, and people, in fact, some people even say, you know, give the guy a bipartisan endorsement, we can't beat him. Instead, and we have Ann Donnelly there, and she's running a great campaign, and she's basically showing that all these guys getting out of jail, all repeat crimes, that's because of Todd Kominsky's law. So, in other words, Ann Donnelly is a great, great candidate, great prosecutor, and I'm doing everything I can to get her elected as the DA. If she's doing it on her own, I don't get her elected, and Donnelly's going to get herself elected, because she's a great woman.
Absolutely. Congressman Peter King on the Bernie and Sid Show. Congressman, everybody's been obsessing over former Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden's old emails. They really got him. They got him to retire or to resign or whatever the hell he did. Now, the Daily Mail, they have this. And by the way, they stole this story from Miranda Devine. But anyway, their headline is this. Emails reveal Joe Biden and Hunter Biden shared bank accounts, paid each other's bills,
yeah.
And the president may have even funded the son's 2018 drug and prostitution binge. And you see nothing about this on the fake news. I mean, this is the corrupt stuff.
And this is a continuation of the campaign. You know, when President Trump talks about the election being rigged, but he should really be focusing on how the media just blacked out all of the negative news on Biden, put all the negative news about Trump out front. This whole thing, you know, with the laptop and all that, all this should have been made known during the campaign. It was hidden. And this, it seems like, again, on the face of it, real evidence there. This is real evidence showing collusion, showing, first of all, that Hunter Biden has real issues. Certainly the fact that I'm talking through my mask here. So anyway, you know, people are looking at me. I got to make sure the mask is on.
Right.
Any event. This is if there's going to be a real investigation. You know, we had 2.5 years of a phony Russia investigation. If there is a real investigation, it should be on this whole thing involving Hunter Biden, whether or not there were mixed bank accounts, how that money went, where's the money laundering, all of that.
Peter, have a safe flight. Get back well, and I'll see you in Freeport, Long Island tomorrow night. Thank you for another great appearance on the Bernie and Sid Show.
Yes.
We love you.
Long live the king.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
You got it. There he is, a great congressman, Peter King, his Wednesday appearance here on the Bernie and Sid Show. 1-800-848-WABC. As always, that's the number. 1-800-848-9222. Still to come, you have Lydia Reports at 8:25. Dr. Nicole Sapphire, it's been a while since she's been on. She makes her return from Fox News coming up at 8:40. And, of course, we're going to play Beat Bernie, your chance at a $100 gift card and a WABC Barry House coffee mug. All compliments of Pete Morgan and Peerless Borders coming up at 9:40.
As we come back here on the Bernie and Sid Show.
Bernie, how much is the very famous defense attorney, our good buddy Arthur Wright Dollar, hate Paul McCartney today?
He hates him because he slammed the Stones, right?
He slammed the Stones.
By the way, Paul McCartney is 1,000% correct.
He said the Stones are basically a mediocre blues band.
You put the word mediocre. He didn't say mediocre, but he said they're a glorified cover band.
Right.
And he did. All these songs that they did, they were done originally by black artists. That's a fact.
All of them?
I would say like 90% of them.
No.
Yes. Satisfaction. All these. What was that one song? Like, I Miss You, you know.
Yeah, Miss You.
Yeah. That was done by a black artist.
But Shattered and Angie and all those are their songs, no?
Angie may have been their own.
I don't know.
There was one or two. They're not non-talented people, but for the most part, they were a cover blues band. I like what Paul McCartney said, and I agree with him 1,000%.
I never really was a huge Stones fan. I like a lot of their songs. Don't get me wrong.
Plus, Mick Jagger had big lips.
He had very big lips. John Gruden wrote that in an email. Yes, you can do that because he's white and you're white.
Oh, that's right.
I guess they're also going to stop. Look at Joel Osteen on Fox News right now trying to kill me. I'm so jealous.
Joel Osteen.
They're going to stop performing the song Brown Sugar.
Oh, come on.
I swear to God.
Get out of here.
I swear. That's what we've come to. They're not going to do Brown Sugar.
You know what it's about, obviously.
Yeah, but why not just call it White Sugar?
Of course we know what it's about. What, are we stupid?
No.
You think we're brand new around here?
Well, I guess I'm stupid then. I'll take the blame.
I got to think, like Dave Chappelle on Netflix, that Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and, well, I guess not Charlie because he's dead. But I got to think those guys live by a different set of rules. They're rock stars.
Listen, you said it before about the basketball stars, Kyrie Irving. They have FU money.
Right.
It would be like, screw you, we're doing Brown Sugar.
Yeah.
We're paying tribute. We love black girls.
In fact, I would come out at whatever shows they've got left before they all die and start every concert with that. Brown Sugar.
Absolutely.
Start me up.
You know what? Follow in the steps of Dave Chappelle, all right? Show some onions and stop cowering to these woke supremacist creeps out there.
I agree. I actually saw a story.
That's one
last
of their
week.
Best songs, by the way, ever.
I know. They were they performed somewhere like a week or two ago. I don't know if you saw this story. But Mick Jagger, it may have been Tennessee. So Mick Jagger went out for a beer at a local bar.
Yeah. Nashville, yeah.
It was Nashville.
Yeah.
And he was in this bar, which was heavily populated with a ton of people. And at no point, including the bartender, and he wasn't dressed in a disguise, we're hot. No one knew it was Mick Jagger.
Bro, he's 78 years old, and he's out there bar hopping in Nashville. That's what I want to be doing.
I know, right?
I swear to God. Yeah. And speaking of, I just did a spot for Trinity Rehab, a quality of life, your ability to move around.
Yeah.
This guy's a regular. He exercises. That's why he runs up and down the
dances,
stage.
He dances. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's why he's able to, at 78, go around bar hopping in Nashville, Tennessee, and he was singing with the people and all that stuff. It's fantastic.
It's a good-looking band right there, the Rolling Stones. That is a good-looking band.
Good-looking?
Pound for pound. They may be great musicians. That's the ugliest band God ever created. Anyway, big 8 o'clock hour coming up. Lydia reports and the return of the lovely Dr. Nicole Sapp by her Bernie and Sid on a Wednesday. I saw on Fifth Avenue yesterday shops starting, very few, and not a lot of them, because Halloween is still coming up, of course, and Thanksgiving. But I thought I saw a couple of shops already getting ready for the holidays. I feel like they're going to usher in the holidays very, very early this year. After last year's pandemic, and now you got these supply shortages.
Yeah, you won't be able to buy gifts.
Right. So I feel like they're going to start to pound us. Which I'm okay with because I love this time of year, especially here in New York. It's the greatest place to be. Start to pound us with holiday stuff early, like maybe right after Halloween. Boom. Let's get right to Christmas. I mean, Thanksgiving is part of Christmas. Anyway, Santa Claus comes out. Thanksgiving Day parade, waves to the crowd, and here we go. So, and again, like I said, I'm okay with it because I love this time of year here in New York. I used to love the old address. I didn't love the old address. In fact, it was a terrifying place, Madison Square Garden.
It turned into one.
Right.
That, yes.
Well, by the time I got there, it was already getting ugly, even before.
It really used to be a glorious spot.
Oh, it was the best.
It was great.
It was the best. By the time I got there in 2016, it started going sideways. And then, of course, by the time we left and came here, thank God, now it's a complete mess. But I will say this. I used to love leaving work with Bernard a couple years ago, and looking at Macy's across the street, with that huge I Believe sign during Christmas.
Yeah.
I know you love that too, Bernie.
I did.
That was, and of course the Macy's windows and all that stuff, and on a snowy day going to Andrew's coffee shop and grab a cup of coffee, look at that I Believe sign, and believe, by the way, that you're in the right place at the right time, and here comes the Christmas season. So I know it's not even Halloween, and it's going to be 80 degrees the next couple of days, but I want Christmas, like now. Now, I want it.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Listen, a lot of times, I believe the anticipation is better than the actual thing. So the days leading up to it.
It's not with everything.
It could be.
Basically.
No, actually, Halloween is great. Thanksgiving is fantastic.
You love that holiday.
I mean, it's a holiday where you don't have to give gifts. You
right.
don't have to receive gifts. No, but none of that. It's just a nice day.
Yeah.
And then after that day is over, in most cases anyway, you have a three-day weekend.
You do. I tell you, but a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying.
They polled. I saw this poll last year. I forgot where it was. And maybe they're exaggerating. I don't know. But a lot of folks that used to love Thanksgiving don't love it anymore. Because they found that during Thanksgiving, they would get the whole family together. And they'd have discussions, you know, talks. And eventually it would devolve into politics.
Well,
there were fights at the table.
Stay away from that, then. Then stay away from
that. Not everybody can do that. Sometimes people bring up stuff that's not all that argumentative, and it turns into, well, what about? And it does happen. So folks are not as enthusiastic about being with the whole family as they used to be before all this really ugly political divide.
You watch Laurel and Hardy. You watch the Westminster Dog Show or whatever.
No, it's
the
Wooden Soldiers.
The March of the Wooden Soldiers.
That's
Laurel
right.
and Hardy. Abbott
and Costello.
Yeah. Yeah, well, whatever. You watch football and you have a few pops and you have a good time. I mean, stop with the politics. Just leave it alone for a day.
I used to go to my sister's house in New City in Rockland County, Alana and Harry, every year. But they sold that house. So the last couple of years, I've been kind of displaced. I don't really have a Thanksgiving place to go. You guys don't make Thanksgiving at home. Sometimes you go to Anthony Capitola's restaurant.
Yeah, we do go out. We go out.
Miller Ridge, something like
well,
that.
Well, we did that one year.
It was only one year? So it's not a McGurk tradition.
No, we go to Jimmy Hayes.
The steakhouse.
In Island Park, which is close.
Does he make turkeys?
It's fantastic. He has turkey special on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Sure, yeah. Whatever you want, he has it. Jimmy Hayes in Island Park, one of the best steakhouses in my experience, in my life. I love that guy. I love the guy. I love the steakhouse.
I'll tell you, last year we one of the first events I really did with John and Margo and the station was outside of, I want to say it's St. John's Church. If I'm wrong, I apologize. Right around the corner from Madison Square Garden. You remember this? And we handed out turkeys.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like Dwight Gooden and who else was there? It was Earl the Pearl Monroe, all these football players, Chad, John, Margo, Todd Shapiro, Brian. All of us were there. And that was one of the very first events I did with the station, and it was so great. You talk about intrinsic reward, intrinsic value. That morning at that church leading up to Thanksgiving, that was amazing.
That made you feel good.
I felt great.
Yeah,
I really did.
They say that's what giving does.
Yeah.
You want to donate a kidney now?
No. You don't want my kidney.
Make you feel great.
You don't want my stuff. You don't want my stuff. My liver,
no,
my kidney.
I don't. But maybe somebody does.
I went through a lot of years.
It might make you feel, euphoric.
Are you a donor? When you die, they're going to take all your...
I have not put that on my license.
You haven't?
No. But I'm not against it.
Right. I mean, you're a healthy guy now. You had a couple of years. Maybe more than a couple.
Oh, yeah. No. Knock on wood, I believe I'm good.
You're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, I limited the damage, even the smoking, too, which, by the way, it was just a weekend warrior with alcohol. They say after 7 years, it just disappears from
the body. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Unless, if you do reach the stage, like, for example, Mr. Rimas, he smoked, and I remember him smoking even at the radio station, you know, like 15 years ago, that short a time ago.
Yeah.
But he developed
emphysema.
Emphysema,
yeah.
Exactly. And once you get that,
oh, it's all over.
It never gets better. It never goes
terrible.
Away. In other words, once you have it, that stage that you have it at, it stays there, and it only has the potential to get worse.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you don't get to that stage, if you stop early enough, your lungs return to the color pink.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. Used to, Chris Libertini, who does the voice of the station, he's a really talented guy. The commercials, the voice, he's a great guy, talented. So he's putting together all these great packages for the weekend. these music radio shows, Dan Ingram, all these other folks we've had already, and the talk guys too, Rush Limbaugh. So Imus is coming up, and they're going to grab a piece at the very end of the Imus show. You remember this. He used to really enjoy having me ask him questions about his career. The last couple of months, we did a lot of that. And I asked him specifically about Howard Stern. And I don't even remember all this, but I heard the audio. He was almost like apologetic. It was almost like, well, I was doing a lot of drugs and drinking back then. And he actually attributed some of that to his fight, which I think to this day is still the greatest radio rivalry ever, right? Stern-Imus?
I can give you the background on that.
Yeah.
Howard Stern would put Imus on the – Imus was in the mornings and Howard was the afternoon.
Right.
And I was there, by the way. I was working in the promotions. I was working in the newsroom, whatever.
So, by the way, according to the movie Private Parts, which I happen to love, when Howard first got there, the program director, Pig Vomit, recommended that Howard should go meet Imus. And in the movie, Howard says, okay, fine, I love Imus. He went to the Imus's office.
Absolutely.
And Imus was a complete prick.
Which, by the way, in the spirit of fairness and transparency, he was that way to everybody. And Howard
Stop
Stern,
referring to me as a wrinkled-up old skunk.
Howard Stern was just another in a long line of, you know, quote-unquote DJs that he thought would pass through, come and go. And, yeah, that's exactly. He's like, what do you want? Well, okay, well, we're done with this conversation. Get out of here. I mean, that's the way he treated people all the time. Listen, and he would admit it. That's just the way he was. He treated everybody. He was an equal opportunity offender, but what Howard Stern, of course, resented it greatly. I mean, because, look, you would as well. You walk in and this guy treats you like dirt.
Of course.
And by the way, Howard Stern looked up to him all these years.
He
lived
did.
Out on Long Island, listened to him.
He loved him.
Emulated him, actually. And then what happened was Imus was in that period where he was getting very drunk. He would call into the Howard Stern show in the afternoon. Howard would put him on knowing he was drunk.
Right.
And have him say the worst, most offensive stuff.
He would call Robin the N-word?
Well, the worst, terrible, awful stuff.
Don.
But that was bad on, yeah, Jesus, Donnie, but it was bad on Howard. Howard knew he was drunk and knew exactly what he was going to do.
So why was he setting him up? He was just,
Because he hated what happened to him when he first showed up at the station.
Right. So we spent the next 30-something years trying to get the guy. I mean, it was just so funny because I was a member of the show, I was part of the show in the early 2000s at WFAN. That's when I first arrived, and I was there the day when Gary called you and Howard ended up on the air with Imus because of something, I guess, you had said about Beth or something like that.
No, the origin of that was Howard started to make fun of Imus's ranch.
Right.
As you called it once, the cancer ranch.
Right. I did say
The ranch for kids with cancer, essentially.
Right.
And he said it was a private ranch and it's corrupt. He barely has any kids out there and the Fed should look into it.
He said it was basically a day camp for Don and Deirdre.
Right.
He's stealing millions and millions of dollars.
He was on a crusade to crucify Mr. Imus. So Imus goes, asks me, he says, how do we get back at Stern like that? I'm like, I don't know. I said, how about if I do a bit? And I go after his Achilles heel, which is
Beth.
His girlfriend.
Right.
Yes, Beth.
Now his wife.
And I'll be Jason Williams, and I'll pretend that I have a little relationship with Beth. Oh, and so I did. I wrote a whole bit, and I'm like, yeah, man, you know, Mr. Allen, man, I'll split that, you know what, like a wishbone, bro. Yo, that B-word got pimples on her ass and all that stuff.
I remember that.
And I called.
It's a great bit.
Call in as Jason Williams. Thank you. And so Howard caught wind of it, and he was furious, not necessarily at me because he knew I was just a henchman.
No, I was Imus.
I was a henchman, right?
Right.
And, yeah, he called in to the show.
I know. I was in the studio. I'm like, oh, my God, that's Howard.
It was classic. Gary calls me on the phone. Howard wants to talk to Imus. I'm like, hold on a second, Gary. Hey, Mr. Imus, Howard Stern is on the phone. He says, well, put him on.
Yeah.
And then they went on. And it didn't go well.
But it only lasted like...
It was short. It was short, yeah.
Like a Saturday night with you and Carol, basically. But it was great.
What happened?
What? Hello. it was amazing.
It was classic.
Is it fair to say, you've been in this business for longer than me, I'm the better part of 2 decades, you're getting on almost 4 decades. Is it fair to say, I think it is, that Stern-Imus is the greatest radio rivalry ever? That's Celtics-Lakers. That's Yankees-Red Sox. I can't think of anybody else. Like Hannity, Limbaugh, they didn't have radio rivals.
No. Certainly in New York. I mean,
did Bob Grant have a radio rival?
No. You'd have to say it was Stern-Imus.
Yeah.
It was like Netanyahu, Arafat, or something like that.
How about Netanyahu or Obama?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good. Yeah, that's
keep
good.
It, that keep works. It local.
That works. Yeah, no, it was the greatest radio. Listen, he would go after radio guys. For some reason, Howard Stern, as I recall, he had something in for any radio guy that tried to be a personality.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually forced one guy in Philadelphia to commit suicide.
Yeah, John, what was his name? John, he did. He killed himself.
Yeah, because I mean,
Howard.
It was pretty horrible.
Well, by the way, don't forget that he actually did an interview with Dana Plato. She was the young lady who was one of the stars on Different Strokes. That show was cursed anyway, Gary Coleman, Todd Bridges, but Dana played the sister. He did an interview with Dana on a Friday morning, and she was having a very difficult time with drugs and alcohol, all that type of stuff. And I heard the interview live. He beat the living daylights out of her, basically called her a loser. Low life, you know, you're part of this show, the whole show, a bunch of low lives. She OD'd and died that night.
Oh,
that
God.
Night. The night. The Howard Stern interviewed her that morning. He was very, very rough on her. And I love Howard. Very rough on her. And she ended up dying that night.
Yeah.
So he has a habit of being ultra vicious.
Very vicious. Very nasty. And then even just recently, I don't want to bring up recent stuff. I know you love the guy. I can't stand him now. I think he's a sellout, a coward, all this stuff.
Well, he is a sellout.
I agree. The stuff that he says about Trump supporters.
Not right.
Stuff he says about people who refuse to take the vaccine. I mean, wishes them dead. Wishes Joe Rogan dead.
Yeah, terrible. Terrible.
I mean, come on.
Well, when I say I love him, I used to think he was a really good person. I didn't know him all that well. I've been guest on his show 3 or 4 times. I did host Whack Pack Bowling on Howard TV. That was fun. I just think he was a good person. I'm not sure he's a good person anymore, but I still think he does the best interview on radio. That's all.
Yeah, no, he does do very good interviews.
Tremendous.
In fact, until he started in on the Trump stuff, I had the Stern on my satellite radio.
I know you did.
And
yeah.
I listened, and I enjoyed the interviews. I hated the other the crazy.
The Whack Pack
stuff.
You don't like that.
It's
right.
Really gross.
Although you
it?
Like Fred the Elephant Boy and... high pitch.
Either way, I'm done. He's dead to me.
He's
I don't,
dead to
I
you.
Do not ever listen. And yeah, he was brutal, vicious, and a sellout. And these days, I detest the guy. Look, he's down with Jimmy Kimmel and all these guys.
Oh, that's his best friend. What are you talking about?
And
Jimmy Kimmel hosts all of his best
shows.
He's
repulsive. I mean, so somehow,
I know. I hate Jimmy too.
As far as being king of the Jews or whatever. I mean, he totally ignores the Jew haters and all that stuff. The real Jew. He puts on some obscure redneck in Illinois. You know, these Jews, we got to get rid of these Jews. But he doesn't go after the real meaningful Jew haters, the ones who actually affect policy and stuff like that.
The ones he's having dinner with in the Hamptons?
Well, yeah. I mean, he just...
Those guys, Howard.
Yeah, they completely ignores all that stuff. Yeah. So I think he's a coward and a sellout, as you agree.
I agree.
And I just have no patience for that guy whatsoever.
But he is
anymore.
A part of radio history. That's what we're doing here every weekend. That was a great conversation. If you want more stuff like that, whether it's Dan Ingram, my cousin, believe it or not, one of the great music DJs in the history of WABC, Chuck Leonard, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, Don Imus, not Howard, but Don Imus, all of that stuff, you can hear it every weekend right here. Chris Limbertini doing an amazing job. Great idea by John and Margo Katsimatidis and Chad Lopez. Once again, weekends at WABC are back and better than ever. More to do, including Litter Reports and Nicole Sapphire. It's the Wednesday edition of Bernie and Sid.
Rubber chicken face doofus is not the image that I want to portray.
This is Lydia Reports on 77 WABC. Here's Lydia Serrani.
Well, guys, at hundreds of airline passengers, Southwest passengers, are still stranded. They're still trying to get on other flights. They've kind of resumed a bulk of them. More than 2,000 were canceled over the weekend. The CEO of Southwest Airlines was specifically asked, does this have to do with the vaccine mandate? Are people protesting this? Because you're saying it's FAA shortage. You're saying it's weather. Yet you're the only airline that seems to be affected by weather. It doesn't make any sense, but he's been adamant about it. Take a listen to Gary Kelly.
I've seen a lot of people invested in this idea that this is somehow related to vaccine mandates.
There's just no evidence of that. As I said, and as Captain Murray said, our people are working very hard. They're doing a great job. I'm very proud of them.
Well, okay. So he says that. Meanwhile, we're seeing it all over social media, the opposite from pilots, from employees. And then on Monday, there is a giant rally scheduled outside of Southwest Airline headquarters where, guess what it's titled, guys? Freedom, Not Force. And, you know, against it, stop the madness. No jab, no job. This is ridiculous. So here he is saying he has no evidence of it. And yet literally there is a rally that is organized and it's circulating all over social media and it's being organized by the employees of Southwest Airlines. So you tell me, how is Southwest Airlines, which is a publicly traded company, getting away with lying to the public, lying to its shareholders about the real reason as to why they had to cancel thousands of flights?
Let me put my microphone on. First of all, a lot of these employees, the pilots and, you know, other airline employees, Southwest airline employees, they can't come forward and say, I'm employing a sick in here. They can't do it because they would be punished. So they can't do that. You're not going to see any of them on TV. So that's A, they can use that as some sort of cover up. Because they can't exhibit anybody saying, yeah, that's me. I'm calling it sick because I'm protesting this vaccine mandate. But the other thing is, these airlines have been flying all through the pandemic without the vaccine. These pilots, and again, as we said about healthcare workers, nurses, police officers, firefighters, first responders, they all worked through the pandemic with no vaccine, and they were hailed as heroes. Now, all of a sudden, planes, they have this a system where they filter the air. They're deemed to be some of the safest places to be on a plane. And planes have had no problems whatsoever. But this mandate, of course, they are companies that employ over 100 people. So they fall under this Joe Biden mandate, and they have to actually adhere to it. The latest wrinkle is that the Southwest Air is located in Texas. Now, Governor Abbott has put a ban on vaccine mandates. So you have this showdown now between the federal government and the state of Texas regarding Southwest Air. Southwest Air so far says that the federal government trumps the state government, and we're going to follow what they say. But it is very interesting, the whole thing. And as far as adverse reactions, let me just not a lot of people are talking to this ICU about this ICU doctor in California. Her name is Dr. Patricia Lee, California-based ICU doctor. She wrote a letter to the FDA and the CDC. Now, she's fully vaccinated. But she says that this is what she writes. Quote, her personal experience this year treating patients in a busy ICU does not comport with claims made by federal health authorities regarding the safety of COVID-19 vaccines. And she goes on to list a bunch of what she calls serious, often fatal injuries, her words, by otherwise entirely healthy individuals. The only thing they had in common was that they had only recently just gotten the vaccine. And these things, I don't even know what the hell they are. Transverse myelitis, quadriplegia, whatever the hell, multi-system organ failure, cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, postpartum hemorrhagic shock. And a lot of people are young and healthy. They don't want to take a chance. A lot of people have had COVID already, so they don't feel they need the virus, and they don't want the adverse reaction the vaccine. They don't want the adverse reaction from getting the vaccine. And a lot of women are worried about the effects on their fertility. They just don't know. It's not been around long enough, so they don't know. So there are a lot of valid reasons. I have gotten the vaccine. I'm fine with it. In fact, I'm cool with taking the booster whenever it comes out. But
I think the state's rules trump the federal government, because how can it be a federal law if it's not been passed by Congress? So that's going to have to be settled in the courts. And then on top of this, a big blow to the whole vaccine mandate is a federal judge in New York granted a preliminary injunction, which is, you know, temporary, in favor of 17 healthcare workers applying for religious exemptions to the state's COVID-19 mandate. Now, Governor Hochul here in New York, she's vowing to push forward, but this is a big deal. And now there's talk about that the vaccine possibly has fetal cells from aborted fetuses. So that obviously contradicts what a lot of people believe. They don't want to have a vaccine that has aborted fetal cells. So this controversy is far from over. And this dictatorship, this tyranny, you can't have a senile person just kind of, you know, throw down the gauntlet and say, this is what you have to do. People have to make a choice for themselves. especially adults, especially if you've already had COVID. That's the mind-boggling thing. And then I learned this yesterday from Dr. Oz. We had him on Cats at Night at 5 o'clock. Even if you don't test positive for the antibodies to COVID-19, but you had COVID, you are still protected against the virus because your white blood cells retain the memory in order to fight COVID.
Right. You're protected. You're protected, but you can still give it to somebody else.
You can, but
right, so
that's part of the other argument.
I understand that. But the other argument is that for folks that, yes, there are some religious issues, there are some medical issues, but for folks that are like, I'm not listening to these people, they do run the risk of getting other people sick.
Who, vaccinated people?
Vaccinated people can still get sick.
Yeah, vaccinated.
Yes, you can still get sick. You still get the Delta variant. You can still get sick. You're not out of the woods.
It's infinitesimally small.
I don't know if that's true.
But according to these people, they want you to get the vaccine so you don't get the virus.
You have a better chance of not dying or not getting very, very sick, but you are being a little selfish when you don't get it because you do run the risk of getting other people sick. And that's why Kyrie Irving is not allowed in the building because these guys make a lot of money for this league and they don't need to have five guys out against the Knicks because Kyrie Irving, all of a sudden, Mr. BLM has decided to take a stance. All of a sudden, Kyrie Irving.
Well, it's a principal stance. He's putting his money where his mouth is. Let's put it that way. Unlike, say, Colin Kaepernick.
He's a real hero.
Kaepernick made $100 million, too. He's principal.
He made $100 million, Colin Kaepernick. I don't think Kyrie Irving is principal. I think he's just... He don't want to be told by anybody what to do, especially a white man. And he don't do it with principles. You can't tell me that this is a guy that's beating the BLM drum and out there really, really, of every NBA player, the loudest when it came to people getting beat up in the streets, and he was okay with it. Now he's principled?
Where there's risk, there should be choice. And in this case, there's risk. I just listed the ICU doctor from California. We just don't know for sure. It should be a choice. I mean, at this point...
Okay, but that's fine. So if I own a private business, and I got millions and millions of dollars at stake, and I don't want you getting the rest of my people sick, you don't have to take it. That's fine. And stay home. Stay home. Well, I could do that.
That's what
he's
doing.
I agree with both of you, actually. Isn't that crazy? I agree with both of you. But what about the Merck pack, the pill that just came out, the antiviral pill?
It's not
ready
yet.
That is a game changer. It reduces hospitalization and death by 50%.
It's kind of like the Z-pack for COVID, I guess.
Yes. Right. Yes, they're calling it the MPAC, correct.
They've applied for emergency use.
Yeah, yeah.
But where was Biden? Dr. Oz was on yesterday, again, at Cats at Night, and he said we had Trump, who was focused, rightly so, on Operation Warp Speed on the vaccines, but the Biden administration, why didn't they carry the torch and also focus on antiviral? Yeah. It makes you wonder. I hate to start with the conspiracy, but it's like they wanted the pandemic to continue. They love the control.
Of course they do. Listen, we had Ron and Santa on this morning. He's a dear friend. He's a brilliant guy. I'm never going to talk badly about Ron, but he came on to talk about the supply shortage and all these issues going on in America today, and he blamed the pandemic for everything. So as long as this pandemic is out there, you can continue to blame Donald Trump, you can blame the pandemic, and guess what? Maybe win an election because you're lying. You're lying. So of course they want the pandemic talk to continue. Amen. That's all they've got.
But they also claim, too, that the pandemic is hurting them in the polls. So there's a lot of a conflicting,
confusing.
So while the pandemic continues, they've got a scapegoat and they maintain the control. Win-win.
Right. Mm-hmm. Lydia, well, you're a win-win. We love you. That was a great report today. Thank you.
I love you guys too. Today is Wednesday. I don't know. We're going to have a full studio again, Cats at Night. You never know who he's going to have on. He has all the top newsmakers from around the world on his show. It's incredible. You never know who will be on. So 5 o'clock, Cats at Night, John Katzmatidis. Definitely tune in.
You can't never tell. Thank you, Lydia Serrano.
Are you saying, Justin Ellick, that the lovely Dr. Nicole Sapphire has Betty Davis eyes?
Sure.
Okay. Kim Carnes, the classic Betty Davis eyes at 8:43 on your Hump Day episode day Wednesday morning. It's been a while since this lady has been on the show, but she's still killing it every day on Fox News. And there's a lot of COVID misinformation out there. So here she is, our dear friend, Dr. Nicole Sapphire. Good morning, Nicole. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome back. It's nice to have you back. So Bernie says it's infinitesimal, the percentage, and I think he's right. I think he's right. And maybe it's anecdotal, but I don't know. I'm hearing more and more stories every day about vaccinated people that are getting sick. They're getting the Delta variant. They're not dying. They're not on ventilators. But the idea that you can't get sick or the odds are really low because you get vaccinated, I'm starting to believe maybe that's not true. What's the real answer?
Well, you know, breakthrough cases, it's absolutely happening. Whether we're overstating it because we continue to have a large amount of surveillance testing and we're testing a lot of asymptomatic people, I mean, that's also a possibility. But the truth is, yes, many, many people who have gotten vaccinated are contracting SARS-CoV-2 and getting COVID-19. But now we have to reframe our minds because for the last year and a half, people have tried been saying we need to get to zero COVID. We need to lock down, keep kids out of school, shut down businesses, been waiting for vaccines, waiting for treatments. But now we're actually turning this virus into something more similar to the flu as we have vaccines have become available and more treatments are becoming available. So yes, while you can still get infected and you can still get symptoms of COVID-19, those breakthrough cases tend to be more mild. And is it exceedingly rare to have a severe case of COVID-19 following vaccination? That doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but it's much less likely. And that's the same with the flu shot. I mean, the flu shot, we report an effectiveness of anywhere from like 30 to 50%. But there's great data that shows that if you've gotten the flu shot, your risk of a severe outcome from flu is much less, which is why we say, hey, go get the flu shot, because it, at least you won't go in the hospital. And that's ultimately been the goal here. Save lives. It's okay if you get a mild flu or a mild cold. I don't care about that. I care about what puts you in the hospital.
Dr. Nicole Sapphire on the Bernie and Sid Show. Doc, two things. Do you have, and I can't find it anywhere, do you have even a ballpark number percentage-wise for breakthrough cases? And B, what do you think of the vaccination mandates?
Oh, geez. So the breakthrough cases, there. I'm not going to even try and guess how many, what is the actual number. But I do think that, you know, there's a reason there's talk about boosters. There's reason people are, you know, we're talking about now we really need to get to these treatments, because there's a good chance that even if you've been vaccinated, that if you are in a high-risk situation, have a big exposure to the virus, that you may get sick. Now, those high-risk exposures are someone who you're in close contact with someone in a small indoor setting for an extended period of time. Your chance of getting it, say, at an outing or just being out in a restaurant is going to be much less likely because you do have that ability to fight off the infection. Unfortunately, we don't have accurate data right now, and that is because every single state reports differently. The majority of states are reporting even just asymptomatic cases, and the people who have to get tested when they're at their place of business, if they test positive, even if they have zero symptoms, they're counting that as a new case. They're counting that as a breakthrough case. And I'll be honest, I don't agree with that, because if you have viral particles in your nose, but you are not sick, that's a win. That's a win for the vaccine. That's a win for your immune system because you're fighting it off. Why we're counting that as a breakthrough case blows my mind. Now, when we turn to vaccine mandates, so, I mean, I've been in healthcare. Healthcare, I'm no stranger to vaccine mandates. You know, to work in a hospital, you need hepatitis B, you need to be up on all these other things. So I get that. I think that they have gone a bit too far in all of these blanket mandates, especially now that we see that the person who has been vaccinated is able to get infected with the virus and also shed the virus. Sure, they're less likely, but they still can. So it doesn't make sense then to be punitive against a group of people who have chosen not to be vaccinated for whatever reason. Maybe they're already protected by natural immunity because they've already recovered. And we know the data is showing that, hey, natural immunity may be even stronger than the vaccine immunity. So why are these people being punished? The only thing I can say is politics have inserted themselves into this pandemic, and it's going to take a long time to get them out of it.
Dr. Nicole Sapphire. So my son, he's 12, Gabriel. He goes to a school on the Upper West Side. So I'm like Mr. Mom. You know, I stand outside with all the mothers every day, and I pick him up, you know. And there's always a lot of conversation. And lately the conversation has been all of his little friends in school, they've all been vaccinated, all of them. They're all little kids vaccinated. But now they're talking about getting the booster. And some mother said to me yesterday, she said, I hear your show. You talk to all these famous people. Should my son get the booster? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to ask a famous person that tomorrow, well, guess what, Nicole? You're the famous person. Should these 12-year-old kids be talking about getting booster shots?
Oh, geez. So, first of all, the CDC doesn't even really recommend that right now. We have to remember, booster shots have been made available on very limited data. The data that is clear is that people who have had solid organ transplants or have blood cancers or are on certain rheumatologic medications, they did not mount a good immune response to the vaccine. In fact, the vaccine in some of them was just completely inefficient. They offered no protection. So why not boost them? Because the booster does show to increase your antibody response. We actually don't know if these boosters and even these immunocompromised are actually going to be clinically beneficial. We don't know. But with this highly vulnerable population, it's like, shouldn't we just try? We should probably just try.
Right.
I get that. When you're talking about the greater population, that you can't just say, hey, let's just try, when you don't actually have data showing a clinical benefit. And especially when it comes to adolescents, where you do have reports of myocarditis, pericarditis, albeit rare, but there are side effects to the vaccine in younger adults and adolescents. There's still debate on whether they should be getting two doses at all, whether they should be getting one dose, or whether they need any doses. So until we can actually hone in on that and we have solid data showing what is best for them, there should not be any talk about boosting healthy adolescents by any stretch of the imagination.
You know, speaking of Dr. Nicole Sapphire on the Bernie and Sid Show, speaking of politicizing this pandemic and some of the drugs we use to treat it or prevent it, you tweeted about this, Merck applying for this emergency use authorization for this oral antiviral, in other words, a pill. A nice, cheap pill that you can take, a therapeutic, essentially. How come Dr. Fauci, the fake news, and the Biden administration, how come they're not hammering or talking about this really miracle pill that could really be a game changer from what I understand?
Well, so you're talking about molnupiravir, which is an antiviral medication, and it is possible that this may be the Tamiflu equivalent. You know, when we were talking earlier on that we said, you know, the flu's different because we have a vaccine and we have Tamiflu, and we don't have any of those for COVID-19. Well, now we have the vaccine, and now we may have a Tamiflu. We have a cheap medication. Well, actually, it's not cheap, but it's less expensive than some of the other medications that require you to be in the hospital to
take it at home.
But you just go to the pharmacy and you get it, and the early data is showing it's reducing hospitalization and deaths by up to 50%. I mean, that's great news.
Yeah.
And so people are talking about it, but just like natural immunity, they are very hesitant to talk about anything such as the benefits of natural immunity or the fact that we may have treatments available because they think it's going to thwart their vaccine campaign. And at the end of the day, they have to take a step back and acknowledge that the people who haven't been vaccinated at this point probably aren't going to be vaccinated. And so what can we do to save lives moving forward? That is to make sure that there is enough of these outpatient medications available and continue education campaigns. And that's about all they can do.
All right, Dr. Nicole, on the way out, tonight is the big pink runway event from Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn. I know you were by Dolores last year when she won got the Ambassador Award. Tonight they're giving that same award to your friend Margaret Josephs from the Housewives of New Jersey. But on a much bigger, important level here, it's all about breast cancer surviving. You know, the models, of course, are breast cancer survivors, women going for mammograms. What is your recommendation to ladies out there? What age group, how involved should they be in this process?
Well, I love my Dolores and my Margaret because they're both advocates for women going and getting their screening mammograms. So if you are a normal risk, then everyone should start their mammograms at age 40 and get it every year thereafter. And where you get your mammogram matters, so make sure you're comfortable and talk to your doctor about what's right for you.
Great job. Wait,
just one quick question. Should men who identify as women get mammograms as well?
That's funny.
That's actually a great question, and there's not a simple answer to that. It depends on whether or not they're taking hormones, et cetera.
Oh,
so if they are a man who say that they are a woman, but they are not taking exogenous hormones, then they probably still only have the risk of a man.
See, Bernie was kind of kidding, but there was a medical answer to that question.
Facetious and rhetorical, but Dr.
My
Nicole,
life, gentlemen.
She had an answer for it, to her credit.
That's why she's the best. Fox News, and of course, an author of two great books, two great books, and a great hospital as well. Dr. Nicole, welcome back. You were great today. Thank you for hopping back on. We'll talk again very soon. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. There she is. Dr. Nicole Sapphire, Fox News. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. What a heck of a show today.
Come on.
Come on now. Still got Beat Bernie coming up next hour as we get ready for the fourth and final hour on this Wednesday with Kim Carnes, Betty Davis Eyes.
Lips, sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll turn her music on you. You won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York.
It's a beautiful morning.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid show, heard everywhere on that 77 WABC app. Ladies and gentlemen, there was this, well, it wasn't a NASCAR race, but it was one of these redneck type races. And they actually asked some kids to have the racers start their engines. And, one of the kids, he volunteered something that threw the interviewer off a little bit. It was pretty funny. Take a listen.
Parts, they're going to help kick this thing off. All right, guys, ready? In 3, 2, 1.
Drivers, start your engines.
Let's go, Brandon.
That is the kid of the year right there. Let's go, Brandon. And, of course, that chant was all over the place all weekend long. Once again, for about the fourth weekend in a row. And then also somebody put out a rap song regarding this Let's Go Brandon. Believe it or not, a black guy. I haven't listened to it. Let's hear how it sounds, Justin.
And I say it with a passion. As I pull off in the Aston. Don't nobody like it. Cover up and tell the people, go Brandon. But we know what they saying, though. You can hear the chant in every post. Don't nobody want this commie because we not in China. Everybody hated Trump, and now they out to catch a body. Go, Brandon, but we all know what the saying means.
Let's go, Brandon. My man. We all know what they're saying. Oh, that's terrific. That's priceless right there. Let's go, Brandon. Yeah, that's catching on big time. Trending on Twitter and Twitter. And also, again, at the all these college games, and that little kid there, he is just priceless. Look, William Shatner is supposed to go up in space today in that penis-shaped rocket of Jeff Bezos. It's a glorified ride in a private jet for 10 minutes. They're up in gravity-less atmosphere for about 3 minutes, and then back down. So it's a 10-minute ride. Now he's 90 years old. Let's hope another Krista McAuliffe doesn't occur here today, but. It starts at 10 o'clock. They take off from Chelsea Piers right down the block. See you later.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Ready. Another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid show again. Heard everyone at 77 WABCF simulcast out on Eastern Long Island News Talk 107.1 FM and also live streamed at WABCRadio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you can watch us. You can watch us on your smart TV, on your computer. That's right. We're a TV show. Here on at our plush studios on Third Avenue, in the heart of New York City.
Is this the heart of New York City? No, it's not.
Well, yeah,
the West Side is. Like the Garden is the heart of New York City. This is a beautiful part of New York
this
City.
This is Midtown.
Though. I'd rather be here.
Midtown.
Yeah, what I say.
This is still the heart of New York.
Yeah, I know.
This is that side, the West Side. This is the East Side.
I got to tell you, I think I want to go in his rocket, Bezos. I'm a little jealous of William Shatner right now.
Yeah, well, I'll take a pass.
Yeah, but why? Because there's no risk. Like you said, there's no. It can't be Krista McCall, if God rest her soul.
You just jinxed it. You just jinxed it. William Shatner's going to die today.
Oh, stop it.
You just
Bernie,
jinxed
stop.
It. There's no risk.
No, you said they're not even going into space.
You just jinxed it.
You're right. I probably
you know what?
Did. But they're not even going into space, you said, right?
Didn't you say the Yankees were going to win last week?
I did.
All right, and they didn't. And now you're saying that there's no risk?
Well, you told me there's no risk. You said they're not even going into space.
Don't listen to me.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Well, hang it on me, bro. You just jinxed it.
No, but is there a risk?
I'm hanging it on you when we come in tomorrow.
If he dies,
like,
I'm sorry.
Oh, my God, this was terrible.
If Captain Kirk passes away, or you like Eddie Scazzeri Star Trek fans, you can blame me.
By the way.
But there is no risk, right?
What better way to go out for
William
Shatner?
He should go out like that.
I mean, this would be almost, you know.
Well, on a serious note, he should be wearing his stupid Captain Kirk, like, outfit.
Well, who knows what he's going to wear?
Shouldn't he wear that? In, like, a balloon suit?
He's
cool if he's wearing the actual Captain Kirk stupid Star Trek outfit. I say stupid a lot, I know.
He may wear...
the worst show ever.
He may wear something like that. Oh, Star Trek?
The worst show ever. I mean, dumbest...
Do you know that I believe it was only one season? Maybe two seasons tops?
Is that right?
That's it.
Gene Roddenberry is like a genius.
I know,
for
and it's lived on till now.
I mean, Leonard Nimoy, Dr. Spock, and who's the other gay guy that goes on Howard Stern all the time? Sulu? Was that him? I forget. George.
Oh, yeah, the Japanese guy.
He's always pissed. He's a gay. Yeah. He's actually an angry
George
gay
guy. Takei?
George That's right, Takei. George Takei, angry gay guy.
He's actually funny when he...
He's very, very
and
funny.
Well, now
like
they have all these spin-offs of it, so that's what keeps it going.
They have a spin-off?
They got a bunch of them.
Well, like, give me an example of a Star Trek spinoff.
I don't know.
You watch Star Trek?
I'm not a big Star Trek. I'm not a Trekkie, one would say.
Right. So stupid, but whatever. Either way, to each his own. I'm not going to be judgmental.
I am. If you go and if you go to the Star Trek conventions, you're a real loser.
I just called it stupid, and I said I'm not going to be judgmental.
Right. That's right.
Hey, listen, let me just repeat the big news of the day that came out yesterday. Just politically, just want to mention it, that we're not stupid. We covered it earlier, and it is this last week, the bombshell that the FBI and the DOJ, they're attacking parents over this these school board meetings, which have become really ground zero for the culture wars, everything from teaching the kids that whites are born racist and there's nothing they can do about it. Blacks are stupid and incapable. There's nothing they can do about it. And that boys can be get pregnant and have babies and stuff like that, whatever. But it turns out that the guy they used as the face of violence regarding these school board meetings was one guy. One guy was arrested, just one guy down in Virginia. And what he was trying to do was trying to inform the board, ask the board about his daughter being assaulted by a boy in a dress. His ninth grade daughter was assaulted by a boy who wore a dress. And this school was like, okay, if you identify as transgender and you put on a dress, you can use the girls' room. And so he did. And he actually went in the bathroom, and I believe he raped her. It was sexual assault at the very least. But it was rape. And he kept it on the DL for a long time. As a matter of fact, you have the second clip of this guy. I'd like to play it. He kept it on the down low for a long time. But it turned out that last Friday, the same kid, a boy wearing a dress with a penis, of course, was arrested for a similar crime. For another crime, and he was supposed to be at home in home confinement. They let him out. Anyway, this was the father of that guy, who, by the way, they made fun of when he was arrested. Look at his fat belly out there. And he was the only example of anything close to violence regarding these school board meetings. But now they're all being called domestic terrorists. This domestic terrorist's daughter was raped by a quote-unquote transgender. Take a listen.
That's scary. That's really scary, you know, that our government is going to weaponize themselves against parents and they're using my video across the nation to spread fear. That's wrong. I'm not a bully. I'm not a racist. I love everyone. I love this country.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out there. People know that they're not domestic terrorists. They're concerned parents about this lunacy that's going on. Has real concrete effects on people, on his daughter, who was raped in a bathroom by some kid claiming to be a transgender. I mean, come on. So, and also your friend Asra Nomani.
Love her.
She is a Muslim lady. She came to this country. She couldn't speak the language. She's a liberal. She's a single mom. She has a daughter in one of these Virginia schools. She showed up on CNN yesterday with a bunch of books that the kids are required to read. She had them tabbed out, you know, everything already. She had all her ducks in a row because she was being interviewed by one of these fake news creeps who side with the Merrick Garlands of the world. Anyway, this was Asra Nomani proving that they teach sodomy and pornography and pedophilia in the public schools. Take a listen.
It literally says here, whiteness is a bad deal, and it has a symbol of Satan. And this is the contract that they say whiteness brings, and children are getting this book. And I fit into the intersectional world. I'm a Muslim, I'm an immigrant, I'm a mom of color, I am a single mom, but yet I deny all of these, you know, privileges in the new paradigm of the oppression matrix, because we're all human beings.
There you go.
She's great.
White nationalist, domestic terrorist.
I said this earlier. She grew up in a very strict Muslim household. Her father was very, very strict. And yet she still talked to her father about masturbation, orgasms. And as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, she really arrived on the scene, Asra Nomani. She traveled with Daniel Pearl. And if you remember when they started beheading people in Iraq and all these places,
yeah.
He was the guy from the Wall Street Journal. He was the first one.
He was a Jew. Clearly.
Yeah, and they lived together in a house in Afghanistan. They lived together. They were doing a report together for the paper. And he went to work that day and never came back. And to this day, she's haunted by that morning when she said goodbye to Daniel Pearl, and he was beheaded that afternoon.
She's appeared on our show many times, but before that, with you, many, many times down in Florida, which is where the relationship got started. So good for Asra Nomani and a curse on the Biden administration, the Merrick Garlands, the FBI, the DOJ, all of these totalitarian mutts out there. Now, Biden's poll numbers, to the American public's credit, are cratering. Now, these polls are rigged in favor of the left. They're rigged already. And still, they're absolutely abysmal, all these polls. They're all Washington Ipsos, Quinnipiac, they're left-wing polls, and they're still bad. So however bad they are, just figure that it's worse out there, that the American people are wise to the fact that we really, truly have an imbecile in the White House. And regarding the supply chain logjam, the lethargy, the malaise, the lack of initiative that these people are showing.
He is coming out and speaking to the country about that for the first time today.
And like 3 weeks later.
Right, I know. But what's he going to say anyway? He says that he's going to ease concerns. Really? Right.
Yeah, we're making progress. Trump would have had this. He would have had the CEOs in there. He would have had union chiefs. And we're going to get this done. We're going to get that done. We'd have the National Guard help unload, blah, 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 blah. And these people are just like, oh, yeah, maybe we better do something about it today. We'll go on TV. And that's what we'll do. So anyway, on the cratering poll numbers, the always colorful Senator John Kennedy, no, not the one from, Massachusetts. That would be impossible. This guy's from New Orleans. He's always funny on Biden's underwater poll numbers. Take a listen.
I think it's fair to say that President Biden and his merry band of wokeristas have broken a lot of plates in their first 10 months. That's why his poll numbers are going down like a fat guy on a seesaw.
The fat guy on the seesaw.
Like a fat guy on a seesaw. Like a hobo on a ham sandwich. I mean, the guy's just colorful.
Like Linda Lovelace on a bunch of men.
Hey, ho, hey, ho, hey. Yeah. Speaking of which, Kamala Harris, she was out there. Kamala.
Who was that?
Who is that? She would be, in name only, the vice president. But, hey, play this 34th. Now, remember the whole NASA thing she did with the child actors?
Yeah, she didn't say that. She said these were kids and
right.
She ended up being child actors.
It was a fake.
She lied.
It was a total fake. They hired a firm, believe it or not, they hired a production firm from Canada, of all places. Here's what it's called. Sinking Ship Incorporated. That's what they hired. I mean, if that's not appropriate. But anyway, she was out there yesterday, for some reason yesterday, the day after Columbus Day, she was trashing Columbus. Listen.
Those explorers ushered in a wave of devastation for tribal nations, perpetrating violence, stealing land, and spreading disease. We must not shy away from this shameful past. And we must shed light on it and do everything we can to address the impact of the past on Native communities.
How can
today.
You lead a country if you hate a country?
I mean,
how can you? You really can't. Listen, also, Dave Chappelle continues to make news. One of the, the functional tards at TMZ, they actually caught up. You know how they ambush people, these stars, as they,
yeah,
come out of the airport?
That's what Harvey Levin does. Not our good friend Jeremy Kovacs, who happens to be the lone TMZ reporter here in New York. He's a great guy, dear, dear friend of mine. Jeremy's a great guy. But, yes, the majority of them do exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. In this case, it's Damon Wayans. Mr. Wayans, Dave Chappelle. In any case, Damon Wayans was going through the airport, and one of them asked him, and he is comedy royalty, In Living Color, one of the funniest shows ever made in history, right up there, believe it or not, with All in the Family. People might get mad at me for saying that, but in any case, Damon Wayans on Dave Chappelle and what he did on Netflix, a day after the Netflix CEO came out and said, we stand by Dave Chappelle and his right to perform his art. This is what Damon Wayans said.
I feel like Dave freed the slaves, the comedians. We were slaves to PC culture, and he just, as an artist, he's Van Gogh. Cut his ear off. He's trying to tell us it's okay. He's a unicorn. He's amazing. Van Gogh.
He freed the slaves. He's not talking about black people. He's talking about comedians. As artists, we have to speak our mind. He went on to talk about how they test Mercedes, some of them crash until they perfect it, and that's what happens with comedians. They do things, whatever. Either way, Damon Wayans, blessing him, he freed the slaves. Other comedians should be as bold and as courageous as these guys. And Dave Chappelle, speaking of which, Jason Whitlock actually came out, and he talked about John Gruden. And one of the things he said was John Gruden's email about the lips. And by the way, John Gruden, in his defense, he said he was talking about the lip. He called people who lie rubber lips. And that's why he said this guy had Michelin lips. Whatever. That's what he says. But Jason Whitlock
said, there's a lot of emails with a lot of misogynistic, homophobic, nasty stuff. So, I'm not defending
John Gruden. So Jason Whitlock says, hey, listen, has the NFL ever listened to their upcoming halftime show at the Super Bowl? Dr. Dre, Snoop, Eminem?
Right,
you want to hear misogynistic, racist, the N-word, all kinds of things.
He's right.
So he said, and he also
Jay-Z's said, in charge of that, just so you know.
He also said, this is Jason Whitlock, are we black men so fragile that Gruden's comments on Damaris Smith's enormous lips can reduce us to tears? I'm just not that fragile.
Okay, good for him.
Anyway, he said that, but here I want to play one more just to punctuate this regarding people making fun of big lips. Eddie Murphy did that to a white man. Eddie Murphy did it to a white man, and nobody said boo. Take a listen.
Mick Jagger is an ugly with big lips. Mick Jagger's lips so big, black people be going, you got some big lips.
Hey, I'm not triggered.
Hey, it's good to be a black man. That's why I refuse to go with you. That Dave Chappelle's a hero. He can sing and do whatever he wants, make a ton of money, and nothing's going to happen to him. And you just proved my point, because Eddie Murphy said the same thing John Gruden did. Eddie is untouchable, and Gruden had to resign.
Yeah.
That's not heroic. That's just the way this double standard has made life easy for guys like Dave Chappelle.
The
heroic guy would be the white guy to come out and say something like that and see if he survives.
You want to use a different word than heroic? At least Dave Chappelle came out and called reality. In
some
other
of
words,
it did, yes.
Gender is a fact.
He did.
Everybody
do that.
Walking
right.
around on the earth came out of the loins of a woman.
He
okay?
did do that. He
All
did
right?
do that.
That is courageous. That is saying something.
That's courageous.
Yeah, because people will not say. Jerry Seinfeld won't say that.
So
Chris
what?
Rock won't say that.
It's obvious that's the case.
I know, but he went out there and he said it on a very high profile platform.
Yeah, he's got a few money. He can do whatever he wants.
God bless him.
Yeah, and he's good. So he happens to be good. So I don't resent him because he happens to be good at what he does. Beat Bernie is coming up at 9:40, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Need a contestant? We'll take that next.
Asian man, they've given you a number and taken away your name. Swinging on the Riviera.
You can't see his blood. It's nothing but some feelings that this old dog kicked up. It's been raining since you left me. Now I'm drowning in the flood. You see, I've always been a fighter, but without you, I give up.
John Bon Jovi, always. We're going to Jersey. You hear Bruce or Bon Jovi, you know we're going to Jersey. So I've got this Pink Runway event in Brooklyn tonight, so I cannot make it, unfortunately, to Tommy Manzo's Brownstone in Paterson, New Jersey, where I'd love to be tonight for this big, big fundraiser for Jack Cittarelli. If you missed it last night, was the second debate between Jack Cittarelli, hopefully the next governor of New Jersey, and the current governor, a dickhead Phil Murphy. And Jack, according to everybody, just ran roughshod all over Phil Murphy.
Again.
The man that would know that because he's very close with Jack. In fact, he got Cittarelli on the show for us yesterday. And he watched all of it, of course. And he is in charge of this fundraiser at the Brownstone tonight. Is Jack Manzo. Now, Jack, even though Tommy Manzo owns that building, you got the same name. You're not related to Tommy Manzo, right? There's no relation.
No, Sid. Hi, and thanks, Bernie and Sid, for having me on. Our grandfathers grew up about 20 miles from each other in Italy, but not related.
That's so weird. That's so weird. They both have the Manzo name. All right, so let's get right to it. Again, I saw some of it. It was hard to see here in New York. There was no outlet. We found out late Newsmax had it. So for folks that did not see it, we're hearing this morning that Cittarelli, for the second consecutive time, really, really got the win last night. What did you see?
Well, if anybody wants to see it, you could see it on YouTube. They could play it on YouTube.
Okay.
But Jack really, he kicked his ass again. he's a disgrace. I mean, he's really got no substance. He's got no accomplishments to talk about. But I want to repeat an exact quote that Phil Murphy, the governor of New Jersey, said. I'm quoting here. Do we stand with our own democracy, or do we stand with Confederate flags and white supremacists and a pack of lies?
Oh, my God. Terrible. Jeez. That's how he
And this is
us.
After saying multiple times that he doesn't want it us versus them, but yet he would say something so, divisive like that.
Exactly.
I think he wants to keep it us versus them.
Yeah, no, he continues to lie, lying about, Cittarelli and a woman's right to choose and a bunch of other stuff. I love the part where they talked about property taxes, where Cittarelli said that, hey, if Murphy had cut everybody's property tax in half, I'd be endorsing Murphy, not running against him. It was a great line.
Yeah, Jack is quick on his feet, and nobody knows the issues better than him. And, you know, conservatives, as far as the liberals go, us conservatives go from a basket of deplorables to, you know, Confederate flag-waving white supremacists. I mean, I don't know who's buying this stuff. Is anybody on this side really buying this crap?
I can't believe that.
You know, you say they're buying it, and again, this is our friend Jack Manzo. We have been behind Jack Cittarelli from day one. He's been on the show now three times. Early on, we were on the Cittarelli bandwagon, not as much as you. You're his friend, but we have. But I got to tell you, when I've seen those two debate, even though Cittarelli clearly gets the better of him, Phil Murphy's a very smug guy, very confident guy. He thinks this is not going to be close. I think he really thinks that.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we don't know. We have no representation in Paterson and Camden and Jersey City and in Newark. So really, we really don't know what's going on at the polls there. It's a shame.
So
there were two people arrested and convicted in Paterson within the last year or two for voter fraud. One was a sitting council president.
The whole council got arrested. Yeah, I think like seven of them.
It was a whole bunch.
Tell you it doesn't happen. On what degree, I can't tell you, but don't let anybody tell you it doesn't happen.
No, we believe it does. Look, they also touched last night, Jack Cittarelli, who, by the way, we just love the cut of his jib. We think he has national potential. He really is great. He's maybe even better than Ron DeSantis. I have to tell you, he's got the composure, the toughness, the knowledge, the quick on his feet ability, all that stuff. But anyway, you touched on the fact that, these people not wanting to work because the government disincentivizes them to want to work by paying them unemployment bonuses, you know, eviction moratoriums, all that stuff. I mean, Jack Cittarelli stands for get out, get your ass out there and get to work and let's get this country going.
Yeah, and Murphy feels that's us against them. It's not us against them. It's just the facts.
Right.
Those are the facts.
There's help wanted signs on, right, on every restaurant driving up and down Route 17.
Yeah, I know. I see that.
All over the state.
Yeah, I drive upstate, and I go through Paramus and Route 17, and it's very, very depressing. I love that area, too, because I lived very close in Tenafly not that long ago. So, Jack, but folks, you talk about Patterson representation. There's a big event in Patterson later on tonight. But folks who want to come down or just donate, get involved, and make sure that Chitterly beats Phil Murphy, how do they go about doing that tonight?
You can either show up and pay at the door. You can get in touch with me. I don't know if I should give out my phone number on the radio.
Why not? What's going to happen?
Okay. All right. If anybody,
I mean, I wouldn't, because people want to kill me, but not you.
Yeah. I mean, if I get a couple of calls today, it'll be fine. If anybody wants to, come tonight and want to call me, my cell phone is 201-988-6779. Or you could just show up at the Brownstone tonight. Jack's going to be there from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and pay at the door.
Did you get? Did you convince Frank Catania to show up tonight?
I did not, but there's still hope.
I could text him if you want. I'll make sure he goes. You want him?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. No problem.
Hey, get the word out there, folks. Jack Chitterelli. Get the name out there. Chitterelli versus Murphy. You want to save New Jersey? Chitterelli is the guy.
Hey, you know what, guys? All of this fundraising and talking and rallies and everything else is a total waste of time if we don't get out there and vote.
Exactly.
Everyone needs to get at least 10 or 20 of your friends out there to vote on November 2nd.
Hey, Jack, thank you for everything you do for me and Bernie, for getting Chitterelli on the show, for this event tonight, and for trying to get the right guy in office. Keep in touch right through the election. You're great. Good luck tonight, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Jack. Thanks, there he is, Jack Manzo. And again, it is the Brownstone later on tonight in Patterson, New Jersey, in our effort to get Jack Chitterelli over the hump and beat Phil Murphy.
Now, it's time to beat Bernie.
It's time to beat Bernie.
Sponsored by Fearless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters.
You think you can beat Bernie?
Good luck.
It's time to beat Bernie.
So I'm tired. Is on top of co-hosting this amazing show with Bernard, and now reluctantly accepting the title of a sex symbol.
Reluctantly?
I mean, you know, I still don't buy it, but it exists. You know that. My phone doesn't stop. So, you know, I'll do interviews. I'll have conversations with Bernard. People see this now because we're on TV, WABCRadio.com every morning. And I'll have a conversation with Bernie. I won't look at him once because I'll have to answer 19 texts, you know. Same thing when I'm on the phone with Bill O'Reilly or Phil Simms. It doesn't matter. So that's why I'm exhausted, because it's just too much, Alec. Never really text me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, and you tell me to call you all the time, but I just leave you alone. I
figured, don't call me. Don't ever call me.
You get enough.
Yeah.
You got enough clout, as the kids say.
I don't have any clout. I'm tired. I have a long day ahead of me today, a long day ahead of me tomorrow, and quite frankly, it's been a very long 54 years.
Well, listen, I mean, wouldn't you rather it be a long 54 years than a short 54 years?
That's a hard question.
That's a tough question,
but I
huh?
think you're right.
It's a very existential question.
It is very. That's a good word, by the way. Beat Bernie. Your chance at a $100 gift card and a Barry House coffee mug. Compliments of Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Our contestant today is out of a place called Wayside, New Jersey. His name is Chris. He is owns his own reseller business. Chris, good morning. How are you, pal?
I'm good, Sid. How you doing?
I'm all right, pal. Where's Wayside, New Jersey?
It's Monmouth County, part of Ocean Township, exit 105 or 102.
Like, what are the towns that we recognize?
Well, your people live in Deal.
Oh, of course. Oh, you're right by Deal? Those are not my people. Sure. Those are Syrians. I'm Ashkenaz. Yeah. Yes, they're Jewish, but they're not my... In fact, we fight with each other like Stern and Imus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they're great people.
Very good people.
And then we got Asbury Park and everything else.
Oh, that's a great, great, great neighborhood you live in. That's beautiful. And what's a reseller business? What does that mean?
Well, I rep companies. I buy, resell. I don't manufacture what I sell, but I've got some pretty cool proprietary products that eliminate negative electrical events and lower your electric spend by about 10 to 12%. So
wow.
I'm doing pretty good, yeah.
Oh, good for you. All right. That's a very, very honorable job. You're helping people out every day. So thank you for that, Chris. Good luck today.
Thank you, sir.
Here we go, buddy. Number one, who is the 77 WABC host on the air weeknights from midnight to 1 a.m.?
Currently?
Currently. I'll give you a hint. Black guy.
Okay, so that narrows it down.
Great guy, too.
Hey, here's one. Walt Baby Love, because I got no clue.
Really?
Wrong, you two-legged back of Anthony, should be Jesus.
Dominic Carter, who's a great host. Great host. Sorry, introduced me to Wendy Dominic. Williams. What a mistake that was. Number two. Prior to playing offensive tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles, Pittsburgh Steelers, and currently the Baltimore Ravens, who graduated from West Point and served three tours of duty in Afghanistan? He also, this is not part of the deal, but I'll give it to you, he also did not kneel the national anthem and got some abuse from it, from his teammates.
God, I'm going to bomb on this one. I just don't know.
All right. His name is Alejandro Villanueva. There you go. Number three.
You know, yesterday I went 5 for 5.
I know. It happens all the time, and you get on the air, and they change the game. The Berlin Wall divided the city of Berlin into East and West Berlin from 1961 until when? These are hard questions, though. Like, you have to know the year.
1989?
Yeah. That's really impressive, actually. Who was a Hawaii congressperson and former Army military police platoon leader who ran for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination?
Gabby Gifford.
Yeah, no. No, you're close. Come on. Hot. Good-looking lady. Not Gabby.
Yes. She was a congresswoman.
Yes.
Hillary Clinton attacked her.
Yes. Gifford's the girl out of Arizona who got shot years ago.
Yeah, she was just... Oh, okay. She was just on... Yeah.
What's her name?
Tucker.
Oh,
God.
You're close. Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi.
The police-involved shooting of Michael Brown in 2014 occurred in what suburb outside of St. Louis, Missouri?
Oh, man.
Oh, you know. Come on.
Shoot.
Former Buffalo Bills quarterback, Joe...
Flacco.
No.
Bills. No,
old days, 70s. No.
No. I'm going to go 1 for 4.
No, 1 for 5, even worse. Ferguson, Missouri.
Ferguson.
Yeah. All right, we'll put you on hold. You're a super guy. Sweet guy. Great job. And obviously a very bright guy, but tough game today. 1 out of 5. 1 out of 5. He had the Tulsi Gabbard thing. He can, you know, he said the name of the lady in Arizona who got shot, of course, Giffords.
They're interchangeable.
You know, the in that shooting... You know, there's only been 4 men to manage both the Mets and the Yankees. Only 4. Casey Stengel, Joe Torre, Dallas Green, and Yogi Berra. Dallas Green's granddaughter was murdered in that shooting where Giffords got shot in Arizona.
Boy, you learn something new every
like
day.
10 years old, yeah. 2 right, you win, okay?
All right.
Who was the 77 WABC host on the air weeknights from midnight to 1 a.m.?
Right now?
Right now.
It is Cousin Frank Morano.
That's incorrect. He starts at 1. He goes from 1 to 6. Dominic Carter is on from the...
Oh, I thought you said midnight to 5 a.m.
Midnight to 1. Dominic Carter.
I knew that. I got to pay attention.
Prior to playing offensive tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles, Pittsburgh Steelers, and currently the Baltimore Ravens, who graduated from West Point and served 3 tours of duty in Afghanistan... By the way, Dominic is going to play this night on his show. They're 0-2. Now the guy got it.
I knew Dominic, of course, with Midnight. Course, well, say that. Repeat the second question.
A football player. He played for the Eagles, Steelers, and Ravens. Graduated from West Point and served 3 tours of duty in Afghanistan. You love this guy. You always mention this guy. The one football player you like.
Villanueva.
Yes.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, now he's on the Ravens. Alejandro Villanueva.
Alejandro.
He's
right,
on the Ravens.
That's right.
Yeah. The Berlin Wall divided the city of Berlin into East and West Berlin from 1961 until when?
Until it was, it's either 89 or 90. I'm going to go with 89.
Feels good, right?
Yeah, Dominic Carter. Come on. I don't know Dominic's on at midnight. Give me a break.
I guess you didn't. You got it wrong.
Of course I know he's on.
Right, yeah, keep going with that.
Yeah.
Send it to Dominic.
I forgot.
Send it to Dominic. Make sure he plays this tonight, that the contestant and Bernie both got it wrong.
I only read his, the 77 WABC clip of the day. Listen to Dominic Carter, midnight to 1 o'clock. I read it 5 times a month. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You got it wrong, bro.
Go ahead.
I mean, this is, who wants the... I even told the guy, I said, I'll give you a hint, black guy. He goes, I have no idea.
You know, it just goes to show, I was not paying attention. I really wasn't.
Who was a Hawaii congressperson and former Army military police platoon leader who ran for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination?
Oh, this is the woman who I love. This
she looked
lady.
Great in a white pantsuit. Hot.
Well, she's just a level-headed, good politician.
What did she fight
stateswoman.
With? Yeah, she had a big fight with somebody.
She
I
is into
it.
Mixed martial arts. Yeah. Her name is Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes. What did she have a fight with that time? A Republican. She kicked her ass.
Not a physical fight.
No. Verbal. We made a big deal about it.
I don't remember.
The police-involved shooting of Michael Brown in 2014 occurred in what suburb outside of St. Louis, Missouri?
It was... New Hyde Park. No, it was Ferguson.
Right. All right. Easy win for Bernard. He beats Chris by a final score of 4-1 today. Bernie, say hello to Chris.
Sup, Chris?
Hey, Bernie. How you doing? You kicked my butt.
Nah.
I had a bad, bad day.
That's quite all right. We all do. I had a bad first answer. Good Lord. Listen, Chris, you're out in what is this, Wayside, New Jersey? No, it can't be Wayside, right?
Yeah, it's part of Ocean Township. It's Wayside.
Wow.
It's right by Asbury Park. You've actually both been very gracious to me in the past. About 2 years ago when my father passed away, I'd called in a bunch of times. He was a World War II vet. You let me talk the day after his passing. You guys, Sid, I actually met you down in Florida because we have a place down in Boca Raton during your hiatus down there at the pizza place about 10 miles inland that you and your family used to go to. We chatted for about 30 seconds.
At pizza time in Coral Springs?
Yeah.
No kidding. And by the way, yes, my cousin Michael works there. So your dad died not long before mine did.
My dad died in 19
ago. Okay.
Yeah, more right. Sorry. But I talked to you after your dad passed briefly. You know, I said, you know, he's got friends up in heaven. So
thank you, Chris.
But yeah, I know how you feel. Whenever,
yeah, still sucks.
You know, holidays are tough. You know, today it's going on 3 years for my dad next year, and I still talk to him every day.
Good for you. You're a super guy. Thank you for playing today's game. You really are a sweetheart. Best of luck in your business, and say hello to my friends and deal for me. Okay, pal.
I will.
All right, Chris. Take care. What a great guy. Chris on Beat Bernie.
You got to love our listeners. Hey, listen, if you miss out on the chance to play Beat Bernie, listen tomorrow at 9:40. We'll do it again. Or you can take a stab at the $1,000 Minute on the other side of midnight, hosted by cousin Frank Morano every weekday morning at 4:30. You have the chance to win $1,000 if you can answer 10 consecutive questions correctly in 1 minute. Listen to The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. weekdays for entertaining and informative talk and the $1,000 Minute.
Beat Bernie, sponsored by Fearless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters on 77 WABC.
So, Bernie and I had this great discussion 8 o'clock this morning about the rivalry that is and was Stern and Imus. And, Bernie, it's another big weekend here on 77 WABC. It's the third week of our special programming as 77 WABC celebrates 100 years.
That's correct, Sydney. Join us at 3 p.m. for a one-hour special this and every Sunday in October honoring WABC icons.
This Sunday, Bernie, October the 17th, 77 WABC highlights, Music Radio 77. 77 WABC, including my cousin Chuck Leonard. It's all part of 77 WABC celebrating 100 years.
You're right. Last weekend special highlighting the legendary Dan Ingram was awesome, and I'm excited to listen to Sunday, to be quite honest.
Yeah, Libertini's doing a great job, and I've spoken with the big boss, Chad Lopez, also doing an amazing job. This is going to be a jam-packed hour. It's a must listen.
It's going to be presented documentary style. It features our very own cousin Brucey, Tony Orlando, the guy sitting next to me, you, Sid Rosenberg, plus... a legendary DJs and 77 WABC personality.
That's right. I did a piece on my cousin Chuck. Thanks to John and Margot Katsimatidis. Love them so much for making all this possible.
This is another in a long line of amazing things that we at 77 WABC are doing to celebrate 100 years. It is fantastic. It really is. I'm looking forward to Sunday. And you mentioned they're going to do Imus at some point?
Yeah.
Is that this Sunday? No,
no, no. This Sunday's just music, guys.
Right, okay, good.
Yeah,
okay.
I think Amos is somewhere down there.
Moron, shut up. Get it right, will you?
We got to wait 50 years to get you and I into this. We'll be dead, so maybe in 150 years when they celebrate, they'll have a Bernie and Sid. I don't know.
Whatever.
They never put us on the damn Hall of Fame thing on the website.
Whatever.
And they left Mark Levin on there, so anyway.
Mark Levin...
No, he's a legend. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we're Mark Levin, but if you have somebody who's active on the list, you got to put us.
Yeah.
I'm not going
right,
back.
I said
there.
It.
Be quiet, Mark.
He's been around for a long time.
Who?
Mark Levin.
So have we. 60 years combined.
That's true. 60 years combined.
Yeah, I know, bro. It's a long time.
We're looking at each other like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, and in fact, I'll say this. Levin, who is, of course, a different level than you and I, I'm the first to admit that. But in terms of New York radio legends, Levin ain't us. Not even close. He's a Fox News radio guy.
Quick story. Yeah. I'm flying with Sean Hannity on a private jet from MacArthur Airport. We're going to
Westchester.
We're going to Boston.
Yeah.
No, Iceland.
Oh, Iceland. Long
Island.
We're going to
Boston for a radio affiliate show at a big theater. Monica Crowley was there. Bill O'Reilly's there. I'm with Hannity in a private jet. Mark Levin calls in. Because he wanted to talk to me because he was a fan of the Imus in the Morning show.
Right.
This is before he got into radio.
Right.
Mark Levin called the jet to speak to me.
That's what I'm saying.
Because he was a fan.
That's what I'm saying.
Can you believe that?
I do believe that, of course.
And then, of course, now...
You just proved my point.
Now he's Mark Levin.
Well, now he's the man. There's no question. But when it comes to New York radio...
That was like 2004 something like that.
He's had a pretty good run. Pretty good 16-year run from Mark Levin, that son of a bitch.
Well, he wasn't even in radio at the time.
Ah, he's great. He's great.
He's
brilliant. He's a brilliant man. He really is. He's great.
That's why they call him the great one.
That's exactly right. They actually took it away from Wayne Gretzky. Now it's only Mark Levin. He's a great one. We're done. We'll be back again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Enjoy your Wednesday. Hopefully I'll see you in Brooklyn later on tonight for Pink Runway, the Modernities Ballpark. Until 6 a.m. tomorrow, from all of us to all of you. Peace! Hey.